You're listening to Earnestly Speaking, the only weekly podcast that covers friends, foes, and anything that goes. And now, for your badass host, Ernest Owens. And we're back for another episode of Earnestly Speaking with your host, Ernest Owens, myself. Whew. This is the season four finale. A lot of you all are wondering, does this show ever have a premiere and a finale? It does. This show, each season of the show is 25 episodes. We're in episode 25 of season four, which means it's the grand season finale. We will be back Monday, July 10th. I'm going to take a week hiatus or break before we get ready for season five. Yes, season five. Now, you all know season one was the longest season ever. It was a whole damn year. It was all of 2021. And then 2022, season two and season three was 2022. And then 2023 is seasons four and five. So this is the finale of season four, and the season five premiere will be on Monday, July 10th. So next week, you know, when it is, I guess, July 2nd, you all will be like, okay, where's the show? Da 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 da. I'm going to be here to tell you all, listen, no, there's no show. Well, actually, it will be July 3rd next Monday. So next Monday will be July 3rd. So when July 3rd hits and you're sitting there like, you know, where's Earnestly Speaking? Where's the show? What happened? Remember, we're on break, so there'll be no show. But, you know, I'm consistent with my podcast, as you all know. I don't, you know, do the we'll be back when I feel like it. We'll be back according to schedule. So next week, enjoy your 4th of July weekend. You know, it'll be the day before for July 4th, and it's always that time. And my bestie Jamarcus's birthday is on July 4th. It's the 4th of Jamarcus, so we typically, you know, have holiday and celebrate and do all that jazz. And also just, it's the middle of the year. It's literally the middle of the year. So, you know, I like to take a little, you know, time to myself and relax and reset and get ready for season five. So just, you know, some housekeeping, because some of you all are devout, you know, listeners and will say, wait a minute, there's nothing in the coffers. Where's my show? Well, your show is going to be on Monday, July 10th. So the dynamic season four finale is here, and we're going to end season four on a lot. There's a lot of things that went down, and I feel like this is like the perfect like finale feel, because a lot of things are having their finales. A lot of shows are having their season finales. City council session just had their, you know, finale before they return in the fall. You know, September 14th, city council will be back on. So we just had the season finale of City Council Live on WRD, which is, you know, of course, I'm the host. So, you know, we took our break on Thursday. So everything feels like it's winding down and relaxing, getting ready for the summer, graduations, all of that. It's like the perfect time. But here at Earnestly Speaking, we don't have like a long ass, you know, breaks. We just take one little break, you know, one little week and reset and recharge. And there's a lot of things happening. You know, my good friend, my good bestie, my good Judy, Amanda, she's moving into my building. You know, it'll be our building next week. So she's moving into her new place, which is not too far from me on the same floor of our lovely spot in West Philly. So, you know, she's going to be getting ready for that. And, you know, I'll be, you know, around. And Jamarcus, we're doing his birthday a little earlier, because July 4th is going to be on a Tuesday. And honestly, that's, you know, we're going to have his birthday on that weekend leading up to July 4th rather than have it in the middle of the week. So we have some festivities and stuff planned. And I'll probably recap you all on what went down while I was on my, you know, my hiatus, my little vacation for a week. And so, you know, there's a lot going on. So let's get into it. So the National Summer Book Tour kicked off this past week. You know, I went to Baltimore. Shout out to everyone at Baltimore. Greedy Reads. We was in Greedy Reads in Remington, the Remington location. A lot of people showed up. It was a great time. Shout out to my good old friend Joe, who showed and exhibited proper etiquette for when friends come to book signings. His girlfriend, which is my good friend Amanda, I can't say the same about some of her friends. They don't necessarily have, the best, book signing etiquette. When you go to a book signing, you show up on time. Joe brought all his friends. It was a good old time. They got to, meet me and, had a nice crew of people, and they showed up and bought the book, asked intelligent questions, and really was engaged with what we had to offer. They didn't come with a book from Amazon and, booze bought books for each other as pairs. It wasn't like a, we bought one book to represent us all from Amazon and made it awkward at the signing. So it was a really good time. They came through. It was a wonderful. Janetta Elzy, who, was in conversation with me, she was so funny and so lively. And we just had a really good conversation. And it didn't even feel like it was a book talk. We were just talking about life and everything. But of course, in connection to the topic on cancel culture, which has really been heating up. So it was great. We had dinner at Kona Grill and got a chance to just talk more and catch up in general. She was on the podcast last year during season two when I had wrote this story about Campaign Zero, that award-winning piece that I did for New York Magazine. And I delved into all of the controversies and everything with Campaign Zero, where she worked alongside interesting Baltimore history. D-Ray McKesson, who used to be a big old star, Mr. Blue Vest is what we used to call him. He wore the blue vest all the time and was the protest and everything. He's kind of gotten more irrelevant, rightfully so. But he ran for mayor of Baltimore years ago. It was a flop. I mean, it was a total flop. But, just some history. Yeah, he ran for mayor of Baltimore a couple years ago, and people just looked at him like, who the hell is this? And they proceeded to vote Democrat. And they did not entertain his, shenanigans. So, that's how it is in politics, especially local politics. But nonetheless, Baltimore was lovely. The hotel I was in, I was at the Staybridge, cute hotel, nice suite. I had a nice little suite. And it was just nice to just relax and sleep well and, show love. It was a great, overnight stay, and I had a good time. So, the rest of the week was fabulous. I went to Co-op, which is in West Philly, and you well, University City. Let me be clear, University City. It's CO slash OP Co-op, and it is in the Drexel University area. And they had a summer menu preview, which I, this week is the kickoff to spring. Even though the weather, not spring, summer, it hasn't. The weather does not feel like summer. It's so weird. Like, I feel like 2 weeks ago, the weather was just loud and hot and heavy. And now all of a sudden, it's a little chilly. It's the semi-rain. It's all of this going on. It does not feel like summer. Climate change is real, people. But I believe that the weather will start getting better in the next couple of days. But we've just been having a lot of rain, a lot of rain, a lot of rain, a lot of rain. But no, I went to Co-op, this lovely restaurant. It's really, really good. They use like really good seasonal ingredients. Really fresh ingredients, good quality food. And I did like a nice little summer tasting and tried everything, and it was popping. It was popping. I was very much a fan. I put pictures up on my Instagram. So if you check it out, you can see some of the things, the little bites and things I tried. Great stuff for vegans if you're into vegan eating and vegetarian eating, but stuff for everybody, meat eaters, carnivores alike. Great seafood. Just a really clean restaurant, just a very clean, simple, chill spot. It's connected to a hotel in that area. I think it's called The Study, I think it's called. But it's in a nice area around University City. It's on I want to say 33rd and Chestnut, maybe 32nd and Chestnut, maybe that area. But you can't miss it. It's called Co-op, and the food was really, really good. So their summer menu is great. They're using seasonal ingredients every day. So June was corn. July, they're about to have blueberries. And then August is all about tomatoes because tomatoes in August are at their highest note. And you could expect heirloom tomatoes there. They're going to show up and show out. Now, the biggest dining experience I've had of the Summer so far, what a great kickoff, but also this past week, of course, was the cancel dinner. Thank you all so much for showing up. A lot of you all came through to both tastings, the 5:30 tasting, the 8 o'clock tasting. And I must say that both of those tastings were unique in their own way. So my girl Candace came and she said I had a name for the people who came to the early tasting. So all of my, you know, more mature, older crowd came to the 5:30 tasting. Candace was one of those people, very mature. People kept thinking I was saying old heads, but I wasn't saying old heads. I was just saying that folks who have supper, you know, there's a difference between supper and dinner. I feel like supper is what you eat early, and it's with mostly older people. But I wasn't getting to that. I was just saying there was a very mature crowd that came out. So 5:30, you know, Rebecca Reinhart, you know, former mayoral candidate, Rebecca Reinhart and her husband came. Keira Bradford Gray, who we're going to be talking about later in the podcast, she came with her homegirl. Patty Jackson came, and her mentee, Naji, who runs Fueled on Philly on Instagram, a really hot food Instagram page. It's incredible. Fueled on Philly. You've definitely seen it if you're in the food scene in Philadelphia on Instagram. Who else came? A lot of different hot names came. I got a lot of really great friends. Oh, my homegirl Kelly Mirabai came through and had dinner. I mean, it was a lively crowd. One of my barbers at my barbershop came with his girlfriend and her friend. Just a lot of familiar faces at the 5:30. But at the 8, and they were a lively crowd, very mature, very classy. The food was incredible. You all saw the pictures. If you was following me on social all this week, this past weekend, you saw the pictures. You saw the vibes. It was wild. I mean, everything was incredible. I mean, the fried chicken. Who's the vine? And some really good ribs. It's been hard to find good ribs in Philadelphia. Sidebar, Mike's Barbecue, if you followed the news, Mike's Barbecue is closed down for good. Well, it looks, let me clarify. He is in love. He has a lovely boo, his lover. She is from the Philippines, and he is relocating to the Philippines and exploring and doing new things. And so he is passing the torch to the new owner, who's another white guy. They're both white, of course. He's passing it to a new white guy who's going to own that restaurant. And apparently they're going to keep the barbecue tradition alive. Except the new owner is going to have other things on the menu that's going to be experimental and cool. But the barbecue will continue. Will not be Mike's barbecue. It'll be someone else's barbecue. But they're going to pass the torch to this new owner. And apparently they're going to get them situated up until, I believe, Labor Day or the rest of the summer. So the transition is going to be, it's coming, but it's going to be a nice guide. So when people come to the restaurant, they're going to get familiar with him and the owner. And he's going to guide his customers to keep showing love to this place. You know, I fell in love with Mike's Barbecue for a while. It was my favorite place. Someone asked me about Baby Blue's Barbecue, you know, and I think it was Candace who asked me about them. And I was like, who? You know, look, I, you know, lived in University City. I went to college at Penn, of course, and was there for 10 years. I've been in Philadelphia for 13 years, actually. It'll be 13 years in August. And when I first came to Philly, you know, I'm from Houston. I have to remind you all. So I know barbecue. Baby Blues was just never like that. It was never that. Even though my brother from Temple, he loves Fatu Sa from Star, the Star restaurant. Fatu Sa, I think they call it. Now, I've ordered from them on caviar, but he goes, apparently. He likes the brisket. And that's a real Texan right there, because the way we grew up is that you can, if a barbecue, you knew a barbecue spot was good if the brisket was good. And let me explain why. I had to explain this to my husband the other day. Brisket is a very serious meat. It's a very important tender beef cut. The way you smoke it, the way you season it, the way you marinate it, everything. If the brisket is good, the rest of the barbecue is good, because the brisket, the way it takes in the smoke and the seasoning and the flavor, encompasses the meat of everything, right? If you can't cook brisket, you can't cook ribs. If you can't cook brisket, you can't cook everything else. Everything else will not taste the same, will not taste right. And so when I go to a restaurant, a barbecue place, I'm always going to say, hey, do you have brisket? Can I try your brisket? Because that tells me everything about how you're smoking the rest of your meats, how you're flavoring them. And brisket is a really good interpreter of all of that. You know, ribs, you can fuck around with ribs and play with ribs and do all kinds of shit. Chicken, barbecue chicken. You know, it doesn't really, you don't really know a real smoke master, pit master's talent unless you try their brisket. So when I go somewhere, I always ask for the brisket. And let me tell you something. Mike's Barbecue has the best brisket in Philadelphia. Had the best brisket. I got to talk past tense because they're about to, you know, transition. So they had it going on. That brisket was incredible. Now, the brisket at Baby Blues, which is no longer open, not so much. That brisket was not good. And then people talk about Tradesmen. You know, I like Teddy. I love Teddy. I love Teddy Severius. He has really great businesses and things. So we're just gonna, you know, gorgeous gowns, beautiful gowns. We're just gonna, you know, we're just gonna move on. You know, I don't, you know, if you have nothing nice to say, don't say it at all, they say. So I don't, you know, Tradesmen is, you know, some people like Tradesmen. There are people who go there. It's still open. What do I know? Maybe, you know, some people, that place is still open, has traffic. People like to go there and eat that barbecue. You know, me, I go other places. But it's a pretty place. It's a beautiful building. It's a gorgeous building. Two multiple floors, you know. You know, that's that. But anywho, Mike's Barbecue was really good. Baby Blue's not so much. The other place, we're just not going to even address the barbecue there. It's just, you know, somebody likes it. Somebody likes it. Somebody's eating it. Not me, you know, not mine, not my folks. But, you know, somebody likes it. And they're making money. So, you know, there you have it. but anyway, the ribs that at Restaurant Alexander, Chef, you know, Montana Houston, and Chef Jameer Wimberly Cole, incredible chefs. They're black, they're millennials, they're under 30. The executive chef is 27. The other chef, he might actually be Gen Z, take that back. Jameer is 23. They're both very young and they're killing it in the kitchen. They're like killing it. They can cook their asses off. The future is bright. Okay, and the culinariness is great. It was a really great theme menu. You all saw the menu already. And that grape soda thrills, for people who did not know, it was a grape water ice. It was a grape water ice, a grape soda water ice that they homemade, they made, and it was fabulous. The 8 o'clock dinner was the final dinner. That's when I actually ate. The first dinner I didn't eat. I just wanted to, you know, do my MC thing. But that final dinner, everybody was there, my goodness, all of my friends, Lauren and Amanda and Jamarcus and George and, you know, of course, Mr. Johnson and my younger brother and his girlfriend. We had dinner together. How cute. Laura came out, Sharon, Jamira, all of my PABJ board members. A lot of them showed up and showed love. It was a great to-do. Lots of fans, lots of fun. My lawyer came, his wife, all of the folks came out at 8 o'clock dinner. It was really lively, and bought books and, you know, I signed copies, and it was fabulous. It was a great time. And it was really a fun, immersive experience. Like, it really wowed me out. Like, you know, you can sit back for weeks and envision something in your head and you just wonder, you just hope the execution is going to be fabulous. Well, the execution was great. It was a very wonderful time. And if you have not gone to Restaurant Alexander, please go. It's in Rittenhouse. It's on 19th, right there in the heart of Rittenhouse Square. It is where the old V Street used to be. So, you know, V Street, the vegetarian vegan spot, it shut down, of course, during the pandemic. This place is there. It's Restaurant Alexander. They do really contemporary European style tasting menus and fun food, great drinks. They have a lovely happy hour that's over the moon. Some of the best oysters I've had in the city, surprisingly. And they're just great. And there's black chefs in there killing it in the kitchen. So if you want to really support a different type of culinary experiences, they're one of the few black chefs in Rittenhouse, period. Outside of course, my fave, you know, Chad Williams over at Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But black executive chefs, it's rare. It's rare. You don't see them, you know, just out and about in these streets. So show love, you know, show them some love and go out and support some really good different food in the city. So they were awesome. Earlier this weekend, you know, I got together, PABJ, we have a lot to celebrate the Philadelphia Association of Black Journalists. You know, more on that later in the podcast, but we have been getting some incredible grants and getting some shocking support across the city budget, and we'll talk more about that in the rest of the podcast, but we had a lot to celebrate. So we got together at Philadelphia Distilling, which is one of my favorite places in the city, And they just kicked off their barbecue summer series, which they're doing 3 times this year. You still have time to go. So they just had one on Sunday, and then they have another one that's going to be coming up very, very soon. They're going to have one in July, a part of this series. So the barbecue series was on June 25th. That was the kickoff. They have another one on July 23rd, and then they have another one on August 20th. These are all on Sundays. And what they do is they have a barbecue, and it's like basically driven by tickets. You can get, I believe, 5 tickets for $40, which is not bad. You with that ticket can get an entree, like a food, a meal, and then you can get the ticket. You can get a drink, cocktails. These really great cocktails on the menu, for a ticket. They sell them by the bundle, so you can get as many tickets as you like. But they sell them like that. 5 for 40 is what was the great deal they had. And so they had these really great hot dogs, potato salad, coleslaw, chips. They had hamburgers. These are all off the grill. Barbecue ribs, and their ribs are really good. And then they also just have their cocktails, which they had about 5 cocktails on the menu you can choose from. And so I got really, I got turned. It was a good time. I got turned. It was a really lit experience. So that happened. And then before we get into all the hot news that's been going on in the city, I am participating in the first ever Black Chef Showdown, which will be taking place on Saturday, no, Sunday. Sunday, July 9th at 2300 Arena, which is a really nice venue place. This is going to be a all black chefs, competition. They're going to be having a cheesesteak competition, and there's going to be lots of other food from other vendors. This is super dope, y'all. Y'all need to take full advantage of this. They're having a cheesesteak competition with black chefs. There's going to be a salmon cheesesteak, a vegan cheesesteak, a chicken cheesesteak, and a brisket cheesesteak. Many more that you can try. You can get tickets right now. They're available. Go to www.blackchefshowdown.com. I am an official judge. I'm bringing some of my favorite black influencers, food influencers, to judge alongside. So you might see some of your favorite folks that you see on Instagram and TikTok. They will be alongside of me judging the competition. We pick our top two favorites, and then they compete for the first ever champion, and the winner wins $500, which is pretty dope, for whoever this rising chef will be. But it's black support, black owned businesses, black food. It's going to be super dope. And if you want a $5 discount, you can use the discount code EOWENS in all caps. That is EOWENS, all together, no spaces, and you get a $5 discount code. Here's the cool thing about that. For those who drive, okay, I don't drive, but parking is $5. To get secure parking is $5 on the location. And I know a lot of people be always intimidated about, driving and going to events in the city, like, oh, where do I park? All that. Well, here's the cool thing. When you go on the website and get your tickets, the $5 parking is $5. But if you use my discount code, it's $5 off. The parking is free. So take advantage. Use the discount code EOWENS to basically get a discount on tickets. There's different types of ticket packages you can get. When I looked on the website, which I'm going to look now, it was pretty fair. It was blackchefshowdown.com, which is dope. So when I went on the website, I'm looking at the tickets. They have different packages for tickets for people that want to get different things. So one of the ways that they have it set up on the system is that $25 is the bare minimum, and you can get one food ticket voucher, which is what they do at the restaurant. So there's like, you get a voucher and you get an entree there. But if you do general admission, which is $40, that's the one they recommend people get. The $40, you get 5 food ticket vouchers, and you can get 5 entrees there, and that's $40, which is not bad at all. For $60, you can get 10 food vouchers. So do the math, okay? You're getting a 20% discount if you get 10. So that's for couples and pairs. So let's say, for example, you and your boo want to go,
right? It's two of you all. You are big, huge, hungry, all you can eat type of folks, greedy folks like myself. You get the $60, you get 10 food vouchers, which is more than enough, I believe. And so that is popping. And then, of course, they have the venue parking, which allows your parking ticket to drive through at the event. And that's $5. So by all means, take full advantage. You know, so that you have that. There's also, you know, general admission, which is basically free, but you don't get a food voucher. You don't get parking. Get your parking. Get all that. The event is from 12 p.m. to 6 p.m. And if you enter my discount code EOWENS, you get the $5 off. The event is going to be from 12 to 6 o'clock, Sunday, July 9th. I'll be in the building at 3 p.m., so I'm coming in the middle of the event because I'm actually going to be doing some other things that weekend and all of that jazz. But I will be there on that Sunday. So all of my friends, all of my faves, come through. Tickets start at $25, $5 of parking. We're supporting Katika and Black and Mobile. They're the ones putting this wonderful event together. Katika and Black and Mobile, they're doing this. And it's a Black Chef Showdown, a cultural culinary experience. And, you know, I wanted to promote this because the next time you all see me, you know, the show's coming out, we won't see each other. So I'll be recapping this incredible showdown, you know, on July 10th, which will be the day after this event. So that's why I'm promoting it now. Get your tickets now. It's the link is in my bio. So if you go on Twitter, you click on my bio on Twitter, or you click on my bio on Instagram, you know, you'll be able to see the details and get your tickets. So, you know, I'm going to shout that out. So let's get into all the hot topics that's been going on in the past week. You know, this is the finale, so it's going to be a little spicy in some departments, you know, because I got to keep it 100 and I got to keep it real. So there is an attempt right now in Congress to impeach President Joe Biden. People are like, what do I think? I don't really think anything of it. I don't take it seriously. But, you know, we are a show that makes sure we talk about it, right? Right now, the president of the United States is being threatened with impeachment. And that's a serious thing. You know what I'm saying? That's a serious thing. And we cannot, you know, sleep on, you know, the realities that, hey, is he going to get impeached? Absolutely not. But where are we? You know, where are we? You know, where are we? What are we doing? You know, what are we doing as a group? What are we doing as a country? What the hell is going on? Because there's some stuff happening and, you know, we got to stay woke. Especially given, all the things that's happened, you know, so I'm going to tell you some interesting tea. There's two Republicans that are actually beefing right now behind Joe Biden. I know a lot of people have been making that mistake lately, but there's a lot of interesting fights that's been happening on Congress amongst Republicans. They're beefing with each other. So Marjorie Taylor Greene called Lauren Boebert a little bitch on the House floor. And you know, white women, when they call each other little bitch or they say the term little bitch, you know, that is nothing to play with. They that is very like, it's giving catfight. So Representative, okay, this is a congressperson, Marjorie Taylor Greene and Rep. Lauren Boebert got into a very heated exchange on the floor early this week. And basically Greene called her a little bitch. These are two MAGA supporters. They've been throwing shots at each other over their competing resolutions to impeach Biden. And it really came to head when Boebert pulled a move that basically undercutted Greene. Now, here's what Greene said. Quote, I've donated to you. I've defended you. But you've been nothing but a little bitch to me. And you copied my articles of impeachment after I asked you to co-sponsor them. That's what she said. And there were people who witnessed this exchange. The girls are fighting. That's just really the best way to describe it. The girls are fighting. They cannot help themselves. The feud is happening. Republicans are fighting Republicans, and they really cannot get over it. The girls are fighting. And the sad part is that Biden is not getting impeached. Like, let's be real. Biden's not going to get impeached. It's not happening. The Senate's not doing it. You know, we can hang this up. But there's all types of problems. And you would think that this week, with everything going on between Joe Biden, it's wild. And to be clear, you know, let me just say that Lauren Boebert, this is the one who had the husband, the bowling alley, he got a crazy pass, allegedly. This is her. She's introduced articles of impeaching Joe Biden, basically trying to talk about his handling of immigration on the southern border. She said, quote, President Biden's negligence of duty has resulted in the surrender of operational control of the border to the complete and total control of foreign criminal cartels, putting the lives of American citizens in jeopardy. She's a Colorado Republican, y'all. Bear with her. Now, she made a successful bid to impeach Biden in 2021, and she's attempting to force the House on the issue. Now, Marjorie Taylor Greene has tried to do this stunt. She's also tried to do it with the same type of language. And basically, Lauren Boebert has upserted her in doing it faster. And now they're fighting each other and calling each other little bitches. It is a hot-ass mess. But this is where we're at. This is where the country is at. This is America, unfortunately. Now, just as if you thought Biden had enough problems this week, his goddamn son, Hunter Biden. Let me just start, before I get into the tea about this, what's going on with Hunter Biden. I know everybody's family got a Hunter Biden, okay? I have a Hunter Biden in my family. I'm not going to get into details about it, but folks that know me understand what I'm talking about. My good Judy, you know, Amanda, she has a Hunter Biden in her family. We all have a Hunter Biden. We all know that you have that sibling. You have that person in your family, a cousin or somebody that is always in some shit. The family's trying to go forward. They're trying to take us back. There's always some scandal, some drama. Every time everything is peaceful, they shake up the fucking table. We all have a Hunter Biden in our family. We all have a Hunter Biden. And so my thoughts and prayers to Biden's family that got to deal with this hot, annoying-ass man. Okay, so let's be clear. On Tuesday, Hunter Biden did a plea deal immediately, and that triggered Republicans who casted the no jail time agreement. He's not going to prison, but people look at it as a gross case of judicial favoritism. Democrats quickly shot back by facing consequences for not filing his taxes and possession of a gun for 2 weeks while he was on drugs. Biden was indeed receiving special treatment, okay? Just not the type Republicans were accusing him of. The reality may be somewhere in the middle is what some people are saying, but regardless of whether his punishment fits the crime, federal prosecutors in Delaware are once again illustrating the very real gray area that applies to the nation's firearm laws. There is something there. There is some weirdness with these firearms, these laws, and everything that comes with them. You know, everyone thought that Hunter Biden was going to, you know, this situation, you know, because let's be clear, he did reach a deal to plead guilty. Now, these are two tax crimes. And then he admits to the fact of a gun case. You know, there's a lot. And the U.S. attorney has agreed to recommend probation for the tax charges. The court filings also state that Hunter Biden has agreed to enter the pretrial diversion agreement in relation to the felony gun charge. I mean, let me just say this. He's the son of the fucking president, okay? There is privilege there. Ain't nobody gonna act like what happened to him is gonna happen to him. Look, if Chelsea Clinton did something, they would have slapped her on the wrist. And we already know Eric Trump and the rest of them did some shit, allegedly. But look, they're not in jail either. Like, this is what happens when you are the son of the president. And, you know, there's the thing about it. Everybody be wanting to throw these criminal shots. Republicans, Democrats, they all criminals. Everybody's doing crime on both sides. Crime is a bipartisan issue. Nobody is above the law over there, right? And so every time one person gets in trouble with the law, then everybody want to throw shots and run with it. Let me just get with the Republicans. Your front runner has two indictments, and that's the motherfucker that is running for president. Hunter Biden is not running for president, last time I checked, okay? He's not. Okay, Hillary's no longer running for president. So what is going on with non-elected officials is irrelevant. Your front runner for president has a federal indictment and has another indictment, okay? Go worry about that. I get it. Biden doing whatever, okay? Biden's son is. But at the end of the day, Hunter Biden's not running for president. Case closed. That's just it. That's a wrap for me. I don't know what else to say. What else is there to say, right? So speaking of which, I got to shout out Biden because Biden is out here doing the work, okay? There's some stuff I want to get off my chest. And Biden is really doing something that is, I think, is going to really, change the game. Biden is really big on junk fees. And I think I talked about this, but the weird sleeper issue, the Daily Beast calls it the weird sleeper issue, but Biden is betting on junk fees, those pesky fees that, you know, we as consumers get when we want to, you know, check a bag on an airline or, you know, buy a stupid concert ticket online. You know, Republicans want to protect the junk fees, which is really weird. Like, why? Like, that's not Republican. Anyway, but Democrats want to dismantle them. And Biden and the White House think that they can be a surprise winner for his reelection efforts. That's what we're hearing from the press. The Daily Beast reported on this. Pretty much they think that if they can get these pesky fees out the way, this will help. Look, I agree with you. This will help. But you know what also will help? Is that the Supreme Court comes to fuck through and address the student loan thing so people can get this $20,000 off their student loans if they got Perkins loans and Pell Grants. That will make the difference, Biden, okay? I see what Biden doing. Biden's trying to save money. Biden, get this student loan situation together and then get rid of these junk fees. And you're getting reelected, buddy. I'm telling you right now, you're getting reelected. Republicans are in a kerfunkle. Because, see, these are the things that make people like Democrats. The problem is that I feel like Republicans are losing identity. These weren't y'all the people that didn't want new taxes? Weren't y'all the people that wanted to make discounts for people? I think the weird part is that Biden is a very interesting type of politician. He is a really big convener. He knows how to sit down with Republicans and his party alike and come to common ground. They're so used to people being radically on one side or the other. And what we're seeing with Biden is acquiescing to the interests of blue collar folks and white folks. And what one thing that we all love, whether you're black, white, Latinx, Asian, whoever, whatever, one thing everybody loves is a good discount. Everybody loves a good sale. Everybody loves to save money. And so if you can hit at these kitchen table issues that impact everyday people, you're going to win. And so he knows that. Biden is strategic in that he knows that we got to get away from some of these bigger umbrella issues. We got to hit people with the pockets. And so he's really paying attention to these little things, because if you can go to a voter and say, remember how you used to buy tickets, get all them fees? Well, you know what? You don't got those fees anymore. And that's because of me. See, Obama was strategic at that as well with Obamacare. Obamacare is what got Obama reelected in 2012. All the other stuff he did was great. Yada, yada, yada. At the end of the day, it was, did you get health care? Do you have good health care now? Or did you save your life? Yeah, that's because of me. And Republicans knew it too. Poor Republicans, they could not shake that shit down. Everybody wanted to say they hate Obamacare. What was the alternative? What was the reason? What was your solution? What was your, you know, what did you propose? And as somebody who is now in leadership, you know, raising money for my nonprofit, doing all this great work, I'm a negotiator. I don't want to be in a room with people that want to just complain all day without a solution. So for all the Republicans that kept talking about we hate Obamacare, I kept asking the question, what do you propose? Because the answer can't be nothing. Because people need health care. People need resources, right? It may not be perfect. Obamacare may have its flaws. But at the end of the day, what are you proposing that's better than it? And if you don't have an answer, you have to shut up. So they had to shut up on it. They could not. Everybody kept talking, we're going to repeal Obamacare. We're going to take it down. And they never did. They never took it down. Because when you make a policy that is universally popular and is going to help people, as much as you want to hate on it, you can't deny it. And so that's really what I think is going to happen. I think, you know, there are some big issues that is clearly resonating. Republicans, and I'm not talking about elected Republicans, but voters, Republican voters, by and large, support abortions. They do. Okay? In all 50 states, there is no state in the United States that have over 30% of their constituents in favor of banning abortions. At least 70% of all states, the population is in favor. The abortion ban is not popular. We're 1 year since Roe v. Wade was overturned a year ago by the Supreme Court. And here we are a year later, okay, looking at the 50th anniversary of Roe v. Wade in general. And here we are. And guess what? It's not popping. Republicans are not winning that fight. And any Republican candidate that is talking about a nationwide ban and killing it and doing all of that, they are going to not win. It's not winning. Even Trump, apparently, in recordings and messages, had said they're losing the fight on abortions. Let it the fuck go. Let it go. You're not winning. You're not fucking winning. The majority of the voters, whether they are gay, whether they are cisgender, whether they are heterosexual, whether they're poor, rich, whatever, across the board, everyone is in favor of it, just like they are for gay marriage. You're not going to win. You're not going to win that cultural war. Let it go, Republicans. Stick with the economy. Talk about money. Come up with solutions for people to save money. But right now, y'all are just becoming the party that's just saying no to anything that the Democrats propose. They say red, we say blue. They say left, we say right, even though we once upon a time supported that left, but now we got to say right because we just don't want to look like we're too much in bed with them. You're losing. They're losing. They're losing the war. Stay woke. Pay attention. They're losing this war right now. And all I need is just for some strong Democrats to step the fuck up and run for some real seats and really put their money where their mouth is. That's really what I want to see. Period. So, you know, we'll see. But while I'm on this topic around fees and costs, I do have to throw this shade, but it's not even shade because it's factual. The FTC, okay, the Federal Trade Commission, is suing Amazon, okay? They announced this on Wednesday, alleging that the online retail giant is, quote unquote, using, quote, manipulative, coerce, or deceptive, end quote, practices to trick consumers into getting into Prime, Amazon Prime. And this is what they said in their statement. Amazon has knowingly duped millions of consumers into unknowingly enrolling in Amazon Prime. This is what they said in the lawsuit. They said the company used tricky interface designs known as dark patterns to trick consumers into enrolling and automatically renewing Prime subscriptions. Now, once consumers signed up, they said Amazon intentionally made it difficult for them to cancel the subscriptions. Now, I don't know if that happened to me. I don't know. All I know is that once I got Amazon Prime, my whole life changed and I got everything I needed. I got discounts. However, some people may not want Amazon Prime and they got forced into it. And so if the FTC is suing you, and of course, let me be very clear, Amazon denies all the allegations. Of course they do. They deny the allegations. They say that's not the truth, that's not how they get down. They're better people than that, and that this is just not what it is, and that's just not true. Well, you know, I don't really believe Amazon, of course, so it is what it is, girl. But at the end of the day, here we are. I want to see how this plays out. I mean, do I get some money? Do we all get money? Is it like a joint class action lawsuit where, you know, they sue on our behalf and then we all get this money because we all enrolled at this time? I don't know. But I was never really an Amazon person until about 2 years ago. So, you know, I didn't know what was going to happen to me. So, you know, maybe I got taken advantage of. I don't know. You know, I don't know what could have been the case. But we'll find out together. How about that? So, moving along, because the tea is hot, I-95 is back. It's already here. They thought it was going to be 2 weeks, but Governor Josh Shapiro, has gotten that bridge to already happen. You know, those workers enjoyed some Stephen Starr catered food while they were working hard to build better back, I guess, okay, infrastructure. The Philadelphia Building Trades, which is led by Ryan Boyer, their workers were working. They got the bridge up fast. And they ate Jackass Burritos, which is from Stephen Starr, which is incredible, by the way. If you haven't had a Jackass Burrito, Caviar, the app, the food app, Caviar has them. You can order them. They're really good. The carne asada, delicious. And they ate chips and salsa from Elvez, and they got some dessert from Fetu Sal. These are all Stephen Starr restaurants and brands. So really, wait, wonderful product placement there, Stephen Starr. Just incredible branding. Because now we're just never going to forget that that's what they ate while building the bridge. And like, talk about the promo investment, right? So great food. Stephen Starr came through and fed those workers. I believe it's like 80 workers that worked on it. But they repaired the bridge. It's working. A lot of people are like, they're not ready to ride it yet. They're scared. But people have been driving it. People I know, they say it's sturdy, it's efficient, and they're doing their thing. Now, you know me, I gotta come through with the, other perspective about this. My God, if they can fix the bridge that fast, could you imagine about the schools with asbestos? Asbestos, could we fix those schools? Can we clean up Kensington? I mean, I feel like that's what it takes. It takes a national crisis or somebody who has presidential aspirations. Yeah, I said it, and I'm going to say it again. Let's be clear, y'all. I think Josh Shapiro, I kind of know, but Josh Shapiro wants to be the next president of the United States. Okay? In the next 4 years, you've heard it on this podcast first. Remember the finale, the season 4 finale of Earnestly Speaking. Josh Shapiro has presidential aspirations. This man wants to be the president of the United States. And so all of this stuff he's doing right now is basically him trying to position himself to run for president. After Biden's done, the floor is going to be probably open. We'll see, right? Biden has to get elected next year. But after Biden gets elected, Josh is going to do 1 term as governor, and he's going to try to move himself to the White House. The conversations are already happening. The positioning is already happening. A Pennsylvania governor, people thought Ed Rendell at one point. Remember the late great, well, he's not dead. Let me clarify. Governor, former Governor Ed Rendell, former mayor, former DA, the guy. Rendell apparently had aspirations to be VP. There was conversations about him being VP for John Kerry. Ooh, that was like what, 20 years ago? Ooh, shit, we getting old. Back in 2024. I'm not sorry, 24. 2004. Woo! 20 years ago, John Kerry ran for president? Oh my God. Yes, John Kerry, 2004. Ran against George W. Bush. For that second term. Bush, of course, won the second term that we were in war. So, the rule is you don't really switch out commander in chiefs during wartime. So that's what he had to his advantage. But look, he wanted it. He wanted it. He wanted to shoot his shot. They really thought Ed Rendell could be his VP, but he picked John Edwards. And then we saw what happened to John Edwards in 2008. But, the world was different. I don't know. I don't know what to say about Josh Shapiro. I don't know where the country's headed. I don't know if the country wants to still stick with white men. We'll see. We'll see. That's all I'll say. But this is an opportunity for him to flex, and he definitely flexed. And, he's also in the news again. There's some other things he's been up in the news against. The school voucher program has support. The Philadelphia Public School advocates are angry with Josh Shapiro for supporting school choice vouchers. Right now, the budget is happening in Harrisburg, but there's some people that's really upset. So Acting Education Secretary Khalid Mumin said this week that Shapiro supports school choice, quote, as long as those choices do not impact school district funding. Now, see, this is one of the moments where one person says one thing and do another. But, the Inquirer reported that the Pennsylvania governor has indicated he supports school vouchers ahead of the state budget deal. Now, this is a reversal from his predecessor, which is, of course, Governor Wolf, his predecessor that could foreshadow a blow to the state public education funding. A lot of people are upset about this. These vouchers, which give taxpayers dollars, they give taxpayer dollars to families for private school tuition and associated costs. They've been a long top priority for Republican lawmakers in Harrisburg. Republicans love school vouchers, but there's also some Democrats that do too, like State Representative Stephen Kinsey, who is going to face a challenger, okay, in the Germantown area. He supports this too. Now, Shapiro has taken the governor, since he's taken the governor's office, School choice proponents have re-upped their advocacy for a form of these vouchers, and they're calling them lifeline scholarships. Now, these lifeline scholarships, this proposal, they have been getting a lot of momentum this week because this conversation around the budget is heating up. There is a June 30th deadline. So later this week will be the deadline. But Shapiro was elected under a promise to work across the aisle. So this is a concession to Republicans that will give him a leg up in the budget negotiations. Shapiro is playing politics. He is a moderate, ladies and gentlemen. You should have known it when you saw it. But at the end of the day, he had a clean sweep. I have no dog in the race. You know, I don't have any children, but I listen to people. You know, I went to public school my entire life. And, you know, I support funding public schools. How I feel about school choice, all I got to say is this. To a lot of these white liberals and white progressives who have kids, and you put your kids in Greenfield and you put your kids in these fancy little public schools that really aren't, you know, the masters of the world, please shut the fuck up on funding public schools. I need to hear from black parents and families in these areas, you know, what they think about this, how they want to navigate this, because these schools are not getting repaired and up to speed. We need to invest in public schools. Clean up these goddamn schools. You want kids to come to these schools? Get this Vestas out. I would love to see the building trades build brand new schools or go in these schools and tear down these old dated buildings that have lead and all kind of shit. Clean up these fucking schools. And then maybe if you did that, kids will want to go there. Parents will want to participate there. And then maybe you wouldn't be having these conversations about school vouchers and school choice. But it's easy to say support public schools and support funding for public schools. But at the end of the day, you look at these schools, they don't have any counselors. They don't have any good drinking water. These are unhealthy places for people to work. So don't even come over here. You know, and so it's hard for me as a Pennsylvanian. See, if I was in Texas, public school. Public schools in Texas are decent. They're livable. They're great. They're wonderful. I can't say the same about Philadelphia public schools. They're not, all of them are not equal. They're not all equal. There are some great schools, but you got charter schools and these other competing schools in the area. It's hard, right? You got Boys Latin, which is a great school, lovely school, clean school, but not every school looks like a Boys Latin. Not every school looks like a Masterman. And we have to fix that, or a Central or a Girls High. We have to fix that. You can't keep asking people to roll the dice and put their kids in these schools if these schools are not up to par. And it's embarrassing because if they can fix I-95, they can fix these goddamn schools. And that's just how I feel about it. So Shapiro's playing politics. He's a politician. He's a moderate. What do you expect? Just saying. So, you know, since I've become a food editor, everyone's been asking me, Ernest, are you going to eat this, you know, lab-grown chicken? Fuck no. So recently, the FDA has approved for lab-grown chicken. They've been using the genes of real chickens to produce these in-lab chicken. People have tasted the chicken. I have not. People say the chicken is, you know, it tastes like chicken, sort of. They're going to start putting it out in California, of course, in these really fancy restaurants. It's going to start in the next couple of weeks in upscale restaurants before it becomes mass-produced. Now, let me say this, okay? As everybody want to act bougie and act like they're scared to eat, they care about their body. Y'all don't be saying nothing there about anything else. It reminds me of when people talk about, like, how Lil Wayne, there was a video on social media about Lil Wayne, how Lil Wayne has to have a home-cooked meal on his tour. He has a personal chef that cooks him home-cooked meals because he can't eat junk food. And they was really trying to act like, oh, look at Lil Wayne being this thought-provoking person about his body. This motherfucker drinks lean and have seizures and pass out. Listen. As much as two things can be true at the same time, he might like home-cooked meals, but he also likes, allegedly, drinking substances that have no business in his body, doing things to his body that he doesn't need to be having in his body. So spare me the health-conscious talk. That's how I feel about some of this talk about it. Everybody be over here like, oh, you know, I don't eat lab-grown. I don't know. I like to know where my food comes from. No, you fucking don't. Most of the food we eat is GMO. No one's getting all organic. So to a certain extent, I say right now, I'm not going to eat this lab-grown chicken, and most likely I will not if I can dodge it. But at the end of the day, most people cannot make that choice and make that decision. And I will say this. I will give credit where credit is due on the idea and this experimentation. We're in a climate crisis. Okay, climate change is real. We're also dealing with environmental stress. Do you all understand how much of the environment we are taking up with farmland, mass production of cattle, industry, okay? Homicides, pesticides, all this shit that we're putting in the environment. We're making a lot of green land turn into land. It takes a lot of resources, a lot of water, a lot of land to feed and mass produce cows and chickens and all these things to produce this food. And it's getting bad, okay? Because with global warming, it's fucking up the environment. It's fucking up the water. It's getting harder. That's why meat prices are going up, ladies and gentlemen. You know, want to think about Meatless Mondays. It's going up because of the environmental cost and the strain. And to be honest, this type of food model system that we currently are facing is not sustainable for the next 50 years or 100 years. I know I sound like the doomsday keeper, but I'm being real. The way in which we're doing farming, that farming culture, this mass production of food, the population is getting bigger, more people are coming, it's not going to work. So it is sustainable, okay, for the environment to figure out how do we produce more food without these environmental strains. So lab-grown chicken is the way. They can produce, apparently that farm, that lab can produce mass-produced chicken at the same mass without all of these chickens being slaughtered and all of the water and the corn and all that shit that you have to use. They're creating alternatives to help with the food supply, to help make sure that the food system is flowing. Because at the end of the day, there's only so much land on this earth. There's only so much of this heat that's burning forests. We're seeing the wildfires. We're seeing the floods. We're seeing land. That's land that would go to animals and pasture and all that. Well, that land's not there now. So now what? Yeah. So as much as I might raise my nose to the idea of lab-grown chicken is here because the environment and us as humans are not doing a good job. So something's got to give. Don't sit up here and be like, I don't want to eat lab. You're going to have to eat it eventually. You might end up having to eat it down the road because the way the environment is. See, if you would have took care of the environment, if you would have, you know, went greener, if you would have just, you know, we would have not been polluting the fucking environment, we wouldn't be in a situation where now we're eating lab-grown chicken. So there are consequences for our actions, ladies and gentlemen, and this is one of them. Bon appetit. So, speaking of consequences, the Titanic submarine. I'm so sick and tired of this conversation. I'm over it. I know you all want to know what I think. Honestly, the only reason why we care is because these people are rich, right? Billionaires that spent $250,000 to get in a submarine that was unvetted, that was uncertified, that was just had all types of red flags and warning signs. Got their asses on that submarine. It imploded. They died trying to fuck around with Mother Nature and go under and see Titanic. Not even going to get into why that is stupid. I'm not even going to get into what they did. I'm not even going to crack a joke. I think all the jokes have been made. I think all the things have been made. I think the moral of the story is just leave shit alone, people. Leave shit alone. But I don't got to tell this to black people because everybody in that submarine was white. Okay? They were not black. They were not black. They could have been other things, but they were not black. Because we don't do this. This is not what we do with money. We don't do this. We'll buy property all day. We'll buy cars and chains. Y'all mad at us for buying Jordans. Well, look, at least we alive in our Jordans. Y'all mad at us buying J's and Rolexes. But the Rolex ain't going to take me down, okay? It might make my wrist a little heavier, a little light, put a little weight on the wrist. But this is what we do. This is how we live. Y'all judge us. Oh, y'all eating steaks and y'all eating these fancy. You know what? It's better than going on a fucking submarine that's unvetted and dying. It's unfortunate. It's an unfortunate situation. It's just a sign of just people with a lot of money who don't have nothing to do with it. All the people in that submarine, I'm not even going to add that money up, what they could do with the money. This is selfish living. This is not soft life. That, remember we talked about soft life last episode. This is just greed. This is what happens when you have a bunch of people with a lot of money and they don't know what to do with it. They don't know what to do with it. They have a lot of money and they don't know what to do with their money. Bless their hearts. So, you know, thoughts and prayers to them. You know, it was an unfortunate situation. There's no deeper things I have to say. I don't have anything poetic or philosophical. Just leave the ocean the fuck alone. Leave things alone. Leave Mount Everest alone. Stop climbing on Mount Everest. Leaving trash, dumping the fucking all over it. No one cares that you climb Kilimanjaro. Leave them alone. Leave nature alone. Nature is trying to tell y'all to leave it the fuck alone.
Leave oceans alone. Stop snorkeling. Shit. Like, leave stuff alone. Like, let things be. Okay? Titanic does not want you to come down there. And if it does, you're going to go down there with them. R.I.P. Okay? Leave stuff alone. Everybody on this, I climb Mount Everest. I climb this. I'm going to climb this. Leave shit alone. People are just dying on dumb shit. Dumb billionaires dying over dumb shit and then taking their kids with them. Just terrible. Just a mess. Just leave shit alone. Period. Leave mountains alone. Leave peaks alone. Leave it all alone. That's my thoughts. So, another great news and better news. Keira Bradford Gray, okay, it's official. She is running for Attorney General of Pennsylvania. Yes, the seat that was previously occupied by now Governor Josh Shapiro is now up for grabs in 2024. This is a contested race. Several people are running. Joe Kahn, who previously ran for DA, is running. There's some other folks running. Delicio, Eugene, DePlacy. I can't even get all the names together, but a lot of people are throwing their race in. So far, Keira Bradford Gray, who is a black woman, who was the former chief public defender, she is running. She came to my dinner, the canceled dinner, the first tasting. She's very popular. You know, she's got a lot of respect. She was the chief defender, public defender in Montgomery County and in Philadelphia. She is an advocate. I interviewed her at the Philadelphia Magazine, asked her questions about the race. She's very passionate. She would be the first black woman elected, the second woman after the disgraced Kathleen. Kathleen ran, for AG. I believe it was Kathleen Kane. Remember Kathleen Kane? She was the former attorney general. You know, she's 57 years old now. You know, she's from Scranton. She was the 48th attorney general of Pennsylvania from 2013 to 2016 until her resignation. She resigned in 2016 following her conviction for perjury, obstruction of justice, and related charges for illegal activities while she was attorney general. It was disgraced. It's disgraced. Yeah, but she's back in the news. She's been, you know, in some trouble with, you know, she was the first woman elected. It was a big deal when she got elected. A lot of people liked her. But, you know, stuff happens. Life happens. But there has never been a black attorney general. People thought that Seth Williams would have been potentially a statewide AG. And at one point, people thought the now disgraced Seth Williams could have been the governor at one point. I mean, this man had thoughts. He was the first ever black DA in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. You know, he came right after the DA, the other one who was just horrible. She ran for mayor many years ago. You know, it's so interesting how many people have come, who've come through over the years. I'm going to remember her, but he replaced her, over the years. Krasner's now in the position now, of course, but Lynn Abram was in that position. Oh my God, Lynn Abram. Can you remember her? She ran for Philly mayor some years back. Philly politics, y'all. Gotta see it. But anyway, Keir is running for statewide. This is her first ever race. She's excited. You know, she's doing everything that she can do. She's getting some major endorsements already from some union groups, from some national organizations. But let me tell y'all some sidebar mess that's happening. Because, you know, I love to spill the tea here, honestly speaking. So, you know, Malcolm Kenyatta is the current state rep. You know, he ran for Senate last year. He lost. U.S. Senate, he lost. Now he's running for Auditor General, which doesn't make any sense because I didn't even know he was into finances or auditing anything. I just think he's just running for whatever's available. Well, what's interesting about him is that he, when he ran for Senate, from sources that I spoke with, Keir Bradford Gray was working on his platform, apparently. This is, you know, I'm going to say allegedly, apparently, you know. She allegedly, worked on his criminal justice policy for his platform. Apparently and allegedly, after that, you know, there was thoughts that, you know, Malcolm would support her because she supported him. Well, he is pushing a guy named Eugene Pasquale from Delco or Montgomery County or Delaware County.
he is pushing this guy who is running for attorney general. Malcolm Kenyatta has been running around town pushing Eugene DePasquale for this position. The reason, allegedly, across Pennsylvania, there is not interest in the state ticket. Now, this is the statewide Pennsylvania Democratic ticket. The Pennsylvania Democratic State Committee, you know the drill. It is being led by State Senator Sharif Street. From what I hear is that, you know, he's the chair of the statewide party. Now, you know, Philadelphia City Committee, that is Democratic City Committee, is led by Bob Brady. Now, what I'm hearing is there's a Pennsylvania state ticket they're trying to formulate. Okay, so you got different people run for different seats. Apparently, Malcolm Kenyatta is most likely going to get the Democratic nomination endorsement. I think that's a surefire thing. Finally, the boy gets the party to support his ass. Okay, well, he is in that seat. Apparently, the state ticket does not want to put up a lot of Philadelphia people, because apparently statewide Philadelphians are not really doing well in the polls. They're just not good to carry on a state ticket. You want people from Allegheny County, you want people from, you know, Dauphin, other places, but you do not really want a strong Philadelphia only ticket. You don't want too many people from Philadelphia. So if Malcolm Kenyatta is the Philadelphia choice, presumably, right? And the reason why I say this is because this is what I've heard. This is the tea. Again, I could be wrong, but hear me out. So there is a woman named Alicia Richardson. She is a former staffer of Sharif Street, right? She ran for the 5th District. She ran for Daryl Clark's seat when he resigned. It was a vacancy. Now, you all know in that district, there was some you know, bumping of heads. Because all of them candidates run, but no one can get on the ballot. Well, Alicia got, I think she got knocked off the ballot, or she didn't challenge Jeffrey Young. So Jeff Young got the seat because he was the only man standing. So therefore, everybody else failed. And she was one of the people that did as well. But what I'm hearing is, in a deal, allegedly, we're saying allegedly, that Malcolm Kenyatta and Sharif Street, who they had their beef, and that is not allegedly. They didn't like each other. I know that for a fact. I can confirm that. They had beef because Sharif Street wanted to run for U.S. Senate last year. And Malcolm absurded him and ran first. And that was backstabbing, because when Malcolm was out here high and dry without a job, Sharif Street gave him a job, okay? Sharif Street made sure that when he ran for state rep, okay, when he passed, the baton got passed him from his cousin Curtis Thomas, Malcolm had a silver footing. Because, see, Malcolm Kenyatta's district is in the senatorial, the state senatorial district of Sharif Street. So Malcolm essentially answers to Sharif Street. He's supposed to. But he defied Sharif Street by announcing his bid for Senate before he had a chance to get his ducks together. So, of course, he was hoping that the redistricting of the maps would set him up to run for Congress. The maps never came through. The redistricting didn't happen the way it's supposed to. So, basically, Sharif Street was stuck at the senator seat. In 2024, which is next year, Sharif Street will be running for re-election for state senator. The plan is, allegedly, that Alicia Richardson, his former staffer, who just did not get the seat for city council, right? She's going to go into Malcolm Kenyatta's seat for state rep. And Malcolm Kenyatta is going to resign, because he has to let a seat go, to move up to run for Auditor General. That's the plan. So if you see Alicia Richardson running for state rep in Malcolm Kenyatta's district, understand that that means the deal's been cut, that he will get the party's endorsement to push him through. Now, he's going to go against a Republican, a Black Republican, name, I want to get this right. This guy's a Republican. He's a Black Republican. And I'm going to tell you who he is. His name is, well, they call him General DeFleur. But yes, Timothy L. DeFleur. He's Black. Timothy L. DeFleur is the current Auditor General. Let me say about him. He's a Black Republican, but he is beloved by Democrats in the state. He supports moderate Democrats. He's going to some fundraisers. I've seen him in person. He's well-respected. He's well-liked. He was the former controller at Dauphin County. So he has a background in finances and budgeting, and he's well-respected. He made history a couple years ago when he became the first Black elected official to win a state, first Black candidate to win a statewide race in Pennsylvania as a Republican. And so that pissed off Pennsylvania Democrats because they said, how in the fuck did a Black Republican, and this is what happened, this was in 2020, how did he win a statewide seat as a Black person before the Democrats? And that is why Josh Shapiro had no other choice but to put Austin Davis in that lieutenant governor's seat to make them running mates, because we, the Democrats, had them fix that immediately. They did. Austin Davis became the second, okay, last year in 2022, Austin Davis became the second Black candidate to ever win a statewide race in Pennsylvania history when he won lieutenant governor alongside then now governor Josh Shapiro. History matters here. I know I feel like I'm sounding wonky, but this is very important to take in consideration. Understand what the fuck is happening in 2024. Timothy DeFlore ran against Nina Mott. Nina Mott came from Philadelphia. She got the statewide, she won the Democratic nomination, okay? And everyone thought they were going to ride that Biden wave and that every Democrat on that ticket was going to win in 2020. Well, guess what voters did? They voted far and wide for Biden. Biden won all over the state. But they lost some of those big seats. So Nina Mott lost for Auditor General. And then she ran for City Council in Philadelphia this year. And now she's on City Council. But this is after this woman tried to run for Congress, tried to run for Lieutenant Governor. She was trying to run for every damn position under the sun. Now she is officially a City Council person at large. She'll start in January 2024. She finally got a seat and she can stop wasting money. But Timothy DeFlore was the Black Republican who beat her. Now Malcolm Kenyatta is trying to run against Timothy DeFlore. You're going to have potentially the Democratic nominee at the state level will be Malcolm Kenyatta. And he is going to be going against Timothy DeFlore in 2024. I'm going to tell y'all right now, I don't think Malcolm Kenyatta is going to beat Timothy DeFlore. You're going to see, okay, and don't ask me how I'm voting. Don't ask me that question. Don't ask me. Don't ask me the question. I'm not answering that question. But what I will tell you is that Republicans will vote for him and Democrats will vote for Timothy DeFlore too. There will be some that will cross over and vote for this man. They're not going to vote. There's not going to be enough votes to pool. He's not going to get Republicans to cross over and vote for him. Timothy DeFlore is a Black man. Malcolm Kenyatta is a Black man. Malcolm Kenyatta is a Black man with no experience. Okay? Timothy DeFlore has experience. Sorry, but this is a weak-ass candidate. Like, in my opinion, I know she's not interested in the position, but you got to get somebody who knows something about finances and budgeting. The best person would be a Rebecca Reinhart, honestly. Have we ever had a female, a woman auditor general? I don't think so. But here's the thing. Rebecca knows finances. Rebecca has the respect. Rebecca has the experience. I would put Rebecca Reinhart, but she has, to be fully transparent, Rebecca is taking a break from politics. But I would just say, if you was looking for somebody to run for that seat, Rebecca would easily have a strong shot. I could see Rebecca Reinhart, you know, taking on Timothy DeFlore. I could see people might crossing over and giving her the shot. Who knows? But she would be a stronger candidate than Malcolm Kenyatta. He don't know shit about no finances. No, none of that. He just looking like he just wants to get a seat. It's looking very thirsty. It's looking very ambitious. It's looking very pressed. So let's bring this all back full circle. He gets this nomination. He gets this endorsement, right? The party is not taking too many Philadelphia people. So there is a conversation I'm hearing among Democrats up at the state level. Do they want to endorse Keir? They want to endorse her slightly, but then they're like worried that if they put her on the ticket, will it be hard? Now, there are some people that told me, some political folks have said that putting her on the ticket, and if she gets the nomination and she wins the nomination, right, that she could ignite the base, that it will excite voters to show up to the polls. The Democrats that may not go to the polls and vote for president will go to the polls because they want to vote for Keir. It will be enough of Philadelphia voters that will show up to the polls to vote for these Philadelphia candidates, but they will also vote for Biden. It will help Biden win Pennsylvania, But they don't think that the energy will be enough energy across the state to guarantee her a win. But she will be good enough to help Biden win, but will she be good enough to win her own race? And the same can be said for Malcolm Kenyatta. Will gay voters and young voters and people get excited to have him on the ticket to get excitement, enthusiasm, right? Because if they're the nominees, right, you can already see 2024, Kamala, you know, Malcolm Kenyatta, Keir Bradford Gray, all of these top tier folks, these candidates, they're going to be up on the stages with Biden and Kamala on the campaign trails. And it will be a good look for them. But the reality is, will they win statewide? That's a question mark. If I was a betting man today, I'm telling you right now, Malcolm Kenyatta is not winning statewide. Unless there's some scandal, some major death, or some tragedy. If the votes are where they're at now and everyone's in good health, he's losing. He's losing. But what he's going to do is he's going to milk this up. He's going to use the opportunity to, you know, make another mini documentary that's going to flop. He's going to use this opportunity to boost his ego and promote himself. He might get a book deal out of this. Who knows what he's going to do? But he's going to use it for his own self-promotion. The only thing I will say, though, that makes this messy is that I don't know if he's going to give up that seat for state rep. Will he let it go for Alicia Richardson to get it? Because to be quite honest, if I had my dirty fantasy would be that he forfeits this state rep seat. He just goes all in running for auditor general like a dumbass. He loses that race. And just like Brian Sims, when he let go to run for lieutenant governor, these people fall into obscurity. So that could happen. He could roll the dice, run for auditor general, lose the state rep seat because Alicia Richardson is going to take it. And once Alicia Richardson gets that seat, she's got it for the rest of her life if she wants it. It's over. It's a wrap. That is what is on the table. That is what it looks like. That is what political mudslinging looks like. And maybe behind the scenes, Sheree Street will be behind the scenes cracking up because he got revenge on Malcolm once and for all. I'm just saying that's my weird, crazy political theory on this whole situation. But there's a lot of questions that still needs answering. I don't have all the answers, but I'm here to tell you that stay woke on this race. Stay woke on what political maneuvers happen. You're hearing it here first. This is the, you know, season four finale. Remember this episode. Remember this conversation. Because when we get into 2024, you're going to start seeing some of these chips move. But what I will say, though, is shame on Malcolm Kenyatta for backstabbing Keir Bradford Gray. Because, again, a black woman that literally gave a fuck about him, tried to support his crappy-ass Senate campaign, and for him to now be out here in Delco, Montgomery County, everything, pushing a white man, pushing somebody against her, knowing that she wants to see, not answering her calls, and backstabbing her like this. What kind of person is this? And work at Families Party? You know, from what I'm gathering, that they're really interested in Keir. They're doing interviews right now. They're talking to people. But you know, what's interesting is that they got behind Malcolm Kenyatta last cycle. Now, this man is getting there's a lot of different things happening right now, relationships that are formulating. I just hope that Work and Families Party recognize that you can't keep on chasing the money trains and the grifts and the things of that nature, because we're seeing that happen right now. There's a new group out called the Forward Party, which, let me just say this right now. This is Andrew Yang's big old Forward Party that just entered Pennsylvania. Senator Anthony Hardy Williams is a part of this group. But to be clear, the Forward Party, y'all, is not a real political party. It's really mostly a PAC. And that's why I think it's more of a grift, to be honest. It's more of a pack for a specific policy agenda. It's not really a political party. So people can join the Forward Party and keep their affiliations. It's just basically they're committed to this agenda, which is basically, you know, ranked choice voting. They're basically riding the Obama iconography, talking about Forward, you know. And the people that is in collaboration is Anthony Hardy Williams, who's a Democrat, and Lisa Boscola, who is not in Philadelphia County. That's where all the energy and support is going through. And, you know, listen, to me, it's giving grift. It's giving ego. It's giving mess. In my opinion, that's my opinion. I just feel like, why are we creating another political group or some confusion. I feel like this is just really an opportunity for moderates to give themselves this glorified facelift where they can be able to reinvent themselves and make themselves seem like they're cooler than what they really are. Because if you look at the people that's running, like Anthony Hardy Williams, I mean, he is running once again for another, for office. He's state senator. You know, he's running for positions. He's trying to raise money. He's trying to make himself cool. And I like Anthony Hardy Williams. I know a lot of people, you know, have their thoughts about him, but I like him. I just feel like he just sometimes makes these weird moves that just seems very, you know, just very, just like, what are you doing? It looks, you know, it looks very, conning, it looks very schemey. He just looks like he's scheming, and I don't really know where is it going, but just super calculated. And I don't really like Andrew Yang. I don't trust him. I just find him to be a shitty individual, so I don't really know how long this little situation is going to last. But I say all this to say that, you know, all these different packs and these little groups, these little cliques that's formulating, it's like at the end of the day, just be a fucking, just get shit done. I mean, I'm tired of all these variations. Like, I come from the school is, if you're a third party candidate, run as a third party. Okay, all this, I'm a Democrat, but I'm with this clique. No. Like, all of that is bullshit. Like, Working Families Party, like, you know, I have to give props to Kendra and Nicholas O'Rourke. You know, look, they are running as third party candidates for the minority seats in city council. They are about that life. They're not attaching themselves to the Democratic Party that much. Now, they do have their relationships with Democrats, but they are really going to run and do what they got to do. All these other people that's like doing all this half-toe dipping stuff, it's getting to a point where it's going to be harder for people to run because people don't know what you stand for. Just be a Democrat. If you don't get the party's endorsement the first time, okay. That's what it means to be in a party and have to work to get an endorsement. Sometimes you will not get the endorsement on the first bout. But does that mean you have to change your whole political identity? Or is it just that the political atmosphere in the city and across the country is so convoluted that now folks have to have other affiliations to get money and get support and get things? I guess that's the case. How annoying is that? And you know, at the end of the day, when you look at in Philadelphia, being affiliated with the Democratic Party is what gets people winning. If you got a Democratic Party endorsement, that's your winning ticket. You don't even got to get all the other endorsements for 5,000 other groups. You just got to stick with one. Look at Jimmy Herity. Jimmy Herity had, you know, some labor union support, but the party is what really pulled him together. Meanwhile, these people got all these other groups, Reclaim, Working Families, all these little groups. They can't carry a candidate to victory all the way. They've carried a you know, Kendra, but they couldn't get Helen Gim. They couldn't get these other people. I mean, it's just like, it's at some point all this money and we're not seeing these victories. I'm just telling people, you gotta focus. You gotta focus, period. But in other news, we have the budget finally passed in Philadelphia City Council. And the good news is that in the budget, they had $25,000 allocated for the Philadelphia Association of Black Journalists. So PABJ, for the first time in our nearly 50-year history, have received money from the city budget. The Philadelphia City Council and the mayors approved the budget, the total budget, and there was money allocated from council members Catherine Gilmer Richardson and Isaiah Thomas, who pledged to support our nonprofit, which is the Philadelphia Association of Black Journalists, known also as PABJ. And the money is going to go towards our youth development and mentorship programs, along with our professional development programming as well. So what a surprise that was. Pretty dope. And, you know, this past Thursday was the last day Philadelphia City Council was in session. They're now on a summer break. They will return back in session on Thursday, September 14th, which, of course, Philadelphia City Council Live, hosted by yours truly, will also, you know, restart again as well. So all of this is happening. You know, it's all good news. And the budget, you know, went on. Catherine Gilmer Richardson and Isaiah Thomas's wage reductions and all of the stuff with the BERT tax, all that stuff that we talked about over the past 2 weeks, all of that went through. And of course, as we know, Jamie Gauthier still voted against the bill publicly. She was the only person on city council who voted against the bill, still holding on to the narrative and the
you know, the rhetoric that she's had about it. But more developments have come out the past week. You know, for starters, it's come out that basically Gauthier did not really do much to advocate for her $72 million quality of life proposal that she made. You know, she had this big proposal about all of these different things she wanted to change in the budget, to update and whatnot. And she didn't come to the table willing to negotiate, willing to talk to her fellow colleagues about how to get some of that money. Of course, no one gets 100% of what they propose in the budget, but you at least try to, you know, get something and achieve something. Of course, all that she was able to achieve was $5.5 million, and a lot of that wasn't to her own advocacy. So you proposed $72 million, and you only got $5.5 million, and you're a district council person. So it's obvious that, you know, she, while she did all the politics and everything else, you know, nothing else came of it. And, you know, she's playing politics, and I think a lot of people are really getting frustrated with her. And we'll see, you know, how this will continue to move forward, you know, as we get closer. Other news, Anthony Phillips, who is, of course, a city council member, he's proposed a mask ban, which has been the talk of the town. And I wanted to provide some clarity on that legislation because a lot of people were like figuring out how did he pull this off? What happened? This bill on the mask ban, now this is about the shiesties, the ski mask, and you know, everybody's been talking about shiesty poo mask, all that stuff. We talked about it a couple of weeks ago when I wrote my op-ed because I'm, you know, against these mask bans. But his ban is specifically on city-funded buildings and agency buildings. So, for example, the DA's office, city council, parks and rec, these are places where, you know, anything that is city-funded, they will not, people will not be allowed to wear those types of face masks. There is going to be some stiff fines if you're caught wearing them, but it's not the citywide mask ban that people really wanted initially. Initially, there was a plan to ban in the city everywhere, but of course the Constitution and other people stepped in and the legal said, you know, there's no grounds for that type of citywide banning, and it can be perceived as, you know, possible profiling and discriminatory. So there wasn't an allowance for the city to do a citywide ban on the masks, but there could be restrictions at city-funded agencies and spaces, but you couldn't mandate it on private property and commercial areas. Each individual property can enforce it if they would like to, but it couldn't be something that was just a mask law citywide. So that, you know, that made all the difference. And I will say, talking to Councilmember Anthony Phillips, you know, he understands that, like, this is not going to really do anything around gun violence. It's not going to be a massive thing. I think it's more of a cultural thing. You know, a lot of the narrative is that a lot of elderly people, you know, see it and they're in fear and it makes them uncomfortable. And so, you know, this is something that's going to make them feel good. But I look at it as a brown noser bill. I look at it as a, you know, it's an ass-kissing bill. It's a bill that, you know, a lot of people who are older, you know, will oftentimes push against certain policies and they will get mad about certain things and, you know, complain and say, hey, I don't like kids sagging in the streets. I don't like people doing X, Y, and Z. You know, they will complain about any little thing. And to some degree, that's legitimate. That's fair. But at the same time, you also, you know, at some point, something's going to give or take. I get the ski masking. I get it. It's like, you know, you look like a muggler out here. I get it. But, you know, I remember people were mad about sagging. Oh, sagging this and sagging that. And then eventually sagging just naturally died down, right? I remember the whole narrative around baggy clothes. Now everybody's wearing fitted clothes, you know? These are trends, and trends will take itself out. And I think when you try to actually put a lot of attention to something, that's when people do the most. I feel like when people was making the most noise about sagging and bandanas and all these different things, that actually made people, young people, actually feel more propelled to do it because it was cool, it was hip, it was pissing off old folks. I feel like the shiesty mask thing will eventually die down on its own. There's no need to put up a fuss, in my opinion. So, you know, that's that. Now, Megan Good and Jonathan Majors, for a long time, I was trying to ignore the headlines. I was trying to not give it any attention, not give it any light. But it's obvious. It's official. They are together. They, you know, she is standing by her man. you know, Jonathan Majors. And it seems that, you know, from what's being said, you know, I've been very, you know, I haven't really talked much about it because there hadn't been much information. But it's looking like there is more to the story than what was perceived, which I'm not personally too surprised by that. But, you know, it is going to be very interesting. But apparently there's various, you know, narratives out there. But his attorneys say there is more to this story to prove his innocence. That, you know, his ex-girlfriend, who's a white woman, maybe, you know, isn't being fully honest about her own circumstances. And there's going to be some evidence and some things that's going to prove otherwise. Regardless of whatever the outcome is, there has been other people who have made accusations. We're going to be, honestly speaking, watching this case very carefully and seeing what happens. Now, there was speculation that apparently there was a woman or another woman that Jonathan Majors was talking to during this whole situation with his ex. I wonder if Megan Good is that other woman. I wonder if he was dating her before the controversy. There was narratives and rumors and allegations that Megan Good came in as a PR stunt to like try to, you know, dissuade. But I'm starting to wonder, maybe, I don't want to believe that it's that scripted. I mean, it could be, it's Hollywood. But I wonder if she and him had already been dating and that they were privately dating and that to some extent this ex-girlfriend might have found out about them and that she's the woman, the other woman on that phone that was texting him and having conversation with him. That this was something that they were doing on the low, and now that the cat is out the bag, you know, she's rocking with him. And maybe, I mean, you know, I don't think Megan Good's dumb. I wonder if she knows the truth, like knows what really happened. And there's stuff that we don't know. And I think sometimes, you know, we naturally will jump to conclusions and as humans, and especially when there's situations around violence and other people were speaking out. But it seems like something else is here. Now, his outfit that he wore to court, with Megan Good. It was giving sharecropper, you know. He had that little cup with him that he likes to carry. He always had to carry a cup with him. I don't know if you've been hearing about this, but he always carries like a good luck charm or something. It's so bizarre. But these outfits he wore, and his fashion has always been weird and awkward. But you know, he's, you know, I've always thought he was cute, but you know, he's a criminal potentially, allegedly. So, you know, we can't be condoning this type of behavior. But we'll see, you know, we'll see what's happening here with the two of them. We'll see. So, it's a thing. It's a lot. But, you know, we'll find out what happens. What a day. So with movies, I saw The Blackening, finally. It was okay. It wasn't bad. People thought it was going to be horrible. It's okay. It's different. It's something better than all the action-packed movies in the box office right now. I felt like with The Blackening, it could have been a TV movie. It could have been a Netflix-like film. Netflix could have ran this through streaming and we would have watched it on streaming. It would have been a hit. But as an actual theatrical film, I felt like it was underbaked in that regard. But it wasn't bad. It just was like, you know, whatever. Speaking of good movies on Netflix, I saw The Perfect Find, which had Gabrielle Union and Keith Powers. You know, Gabrielle Union, we talked about her, you know, like a week ago, whatever. She's a good typecast actress. She knows her roles when she's in her element. She's always been great playing the black professional woman who needs to spice up her love life for good or for bad. She's a typecast. She just knows how to play that role. Her and Nia Long, they bounce off each other with roles. I feel like whatever role Nia Long turns down, Gabrielle Union gets it, or vice versa. I feel like they are literally the same people acting. Nina Long, however, has a bigger range, so I'm not going to even do my girl like that. Nina Long has the range. However, what I will say is you just cannot deny, you know, you just cannot deny the talent there. You just can't, you know, you can't. The film is cute. It's a very good film, perfect for Netflix. You know, Keith Powers is underrated. He doesn't play in a lot of films, but he's really cute in this film. And it's a nice little twist to the movie. Different, you know, older woman dates younger guy. We've seen a lot of those with white actors and actresses. What was that? I Love You, Leo Grande. It's like that, but the black version. For those who remember that movie, was Emma Thompson. It came out like last year. Really good film. But this is, you know, the black version of that. And, you know, Gabrielle Union has been really vocal. She just turned 50, and she's got a special on BT Plus about turning 50. And, of course, she's with, you know, Dwayne Wade, which he is, you know, he's younger than her. He's actually 41. Gabrielle Union is 50 and he's 41. So, you know, she got her, you know, it's a rock and a rolling, you know. But yeah, you know, they're doing their thing. Good film though. Like I said, it's a very good film. I found it, quite, you know, entertaining, for sure. And just some good stuff going on. So, you know, I'm doing everything in my power. I am going to talk about the BET Awards. I'm just trying to prepare myself for my thoughts, because processing the shit show that was is a lot. But I'm trying to just get through the good things before I get into the hot mess that was the BET Awards. So, music. I listened to Kelly Clarkson's new album. It's called Chemistry. Did you all know that Kelly Clarkson has a new album out? You know, they're not promoting the good artists anymore, the good music anymore. This is her 10th studio album. Listened to it, loved it. Very good. Return to form for Kelly. Kelly's been out here singing her ass off lately, and I don't know why people are making comparisons between her and Adele. We're not going to do that. These are literally two different artists, and y'all not going to play with Kelly, okay? Kelly Clarkson can sing her ass off, okay? She can go blow for blow with your faves. The vocals have always been there. We all have known that. She's a singer, and she's been in the game for over 20 years now. Okay, she's been in the game for 2 decades. She's a legend, legendary status. And she's been keeping and maintaining. And even though she does TV shows and hits and other things, she still puts out a good album and a good record, okay? Really love Chemistry, really good album. You know, she just had that horrible divorce, and she's recovering and healing from the process. And this album puts it all together really well. She has some really great songs in this album. There's a really good song in there called Rock Hudson, which is like blows my mind. The vocals are perfect. It's a really good moody album. So if you really want to feel, and you want to get in your feels, and you just want to process and want something grown and mature and vocally astute, this is that album. This is that album. Highly recommended. You know, it gets 4 stars from me. Definitely could see it getting some Grammy nominations in the pop vocal categories. You know, I just hope people really go out and buy and listen to it. It reminds me of Pink's album. Well, doesn't remind me exactly Pink's new album, but Pink had an album that came out earlier this year that kind of just went under the radar. But I mean, these are the girls, the early 2000 girls with the good music and the maturity and the depth. You know, I appreciate it. So highly recommend it. If you haven't heard it, it's out. Check it out. So with my TV this week, a lot of things are going on TV. So I've been following, you know, the Baddies East. A lot of people judge me. I do watch Zeus Network. I do observe. It's a part of the culture. It matters. So Baddies East have had their reunions. And I can tell this upcoming season is about to be fire. I have some ideas of what I think is going to be on Baddies East. They got people from North Philly making it to the finals round. The girls are fighting already on auditions. It's a hot-ass mess. But you know, what do you expect? It's Zeus. So I'm looking forward to seeing how Baddies East is going to play out. Right now, they're just doing audition shows. So, you know, for those who watch, check it out. I also watched Bad Boys Texas, which is like Baddies, but these are men. Bad Boys Texas. The show's going. Razzby is losing his mind. I don't know what is wrong with Razzby, but we know there's been issues with Razzby just in general with his B2K situation, his career, Chris Stokes allegations, all of that stuff. You know, he's got a lot going on. I think he needs to take a break away from the spotlight. He just does not need to be in the spotlight anymore. Just take a break. Count your royalties. Get some of that money. I don't know. Just do something else. I can't with him. I watched Love & Hip Hop this week.
really great. Love in Hip Hop Atlanta. Love in Hip Hop Miami's coming back in August. There's been a preview already, but my Love in Hip Hop Miami is coming back in August. I believe August 14th. So I'm very much so excited about that. It looks like the Love & Hip Hop franchise is only staying with Love & Hip Hop Miami and Love & Hip Hop Atlanta. It looks like Love & Hip Hop, the original show in New York, is done. It looks like Hollywood is done as well. So there's only two of the franchises they kept. The pandemic ate the other two away. There's no more New York. There's no more Hollywood. You know, how do I feel about that? I mean, they kept the best two. You know, Miami was good. Miami is still good. Atlanta is just the best one, period. New York was getting fizzled. It was getting a little played out for me. Hollywood, you know, Hollywood had its moments, but, you know, Ray J and Princess arguing and faking like they're going to divorce and break up and make up, that got played out. And I felt like everybody else in the show just was just clinging. You know, Tierra Marie was fun for a little bit, but, you know, like, if you're not, you know, not missing it as much. But Atlanta and Miami is still back and still in the queue. So that feels good. So I've been watching it. You know, what I will say about this show so far is that it is very disappointing to see Scrappy, you know, basically decline. You know, it's so funny. Me and Mr. Johnson was talking about this the other day. He's never been a friend of Scrappy on the show. He's always found Scrappy to be like very manipulative and just very much a user. And I always found him to be like a guy who was trying to get his act together amidst everything going on. And I felt like at the end of the day, he had a good heart. But this season, I'm like, you're cheating. You're just throwing up everything. You're so entitled. You're bratty. You know, you're just arrogant. And I don't know. I'm not feeling him. I felt like in the past, he meant well. But it just seemed like he's the guy who's always got excuses. It's like, it's always someone else's fault but his. You know, everyone has to be responsible for lifting him up when he's down, but it's not reciprocal. And no one likes a lover that's not reciprocal. Like, if you're the kind of person where it's always, you got all these issues and everybody needs to fix you, but then when you on your feet, you ain't got time for anybody else because you got 1,000 things to do. No one likes a selfish lover. It's trash. They're trash. I dated someone like that years ago. And, you know, when you encounter someone like that, you will leave. So to Bambi divorcing him, you know, not taking that public humiliation, not putting up with that shit, girl, go off, do your thing. You know, they had all those kids together. And it's like every time they turn around, she just kept popping out babies. And that's why I tell people, you can have babies all day and a dog is going to be a dog. Just period. People always think doing these other things, proposing, getting married, doing these things is going to make a person. Listen, you got to come into the situation knowing who you want to be with before. If you think an engagement, you think a baby, you think any of these other external things is going to make a person act better, act right, you got the game twisted. They should be where they need to be on site. One of the things that I will say that I was really happy about my relationship is that we're going to get up to 10 years. You know, actually later this year will mark 10 years since we first laid eyes on each other, which was in August of 2013. It'll be 10 years. But we officially dated and, you know, we became a couple in February of 2014. But, you know, the flirting began in the fall of 2013. So it's been us together around, you know, 10 years close to. And the thing about it is that when you meet somebody that you like and you really want to date, look at me going into a whole tidbit about romantic relationships and dating advice. I guess I'll throw that in. You're welcome. You know, since this is the finale, y'all need to have something to savor on for, you know, the next couple of weeks. This is my best advice I give to young people that's getting in relationships and just people in general. What I learned and what, you know, what I've been through is that you want to date somebody. If you're with someone and you're in a relationship with them and you meet them and you like them and you get a connection with them, if you don't like them as they are in their current state, then don't commit to that person. If that's not, if you're coming into the situation saying, they're okay, but I would like them to change this or change that and change this, change that. Don't get involved with someone that's serious. Don't get in a relationship with them. Don't engage them. Don't be with someone that if you feel like who they are in their current state is not applicable to you or not interesting to you or you're not happy with as is, then don't go there. There's a lot. And the reason why is I tell people stop fucking potential. And what I mean by that is that people love to be with things that have potential. Like, oh, this has the person has a potential to be. Because if you do that, right, you get with them and you're not satisfied,
You're going to spend the relationship trying to change them to be what you want. And maybe they might evolve and change the person you exactly want them to be. Or maybe they don't, right? But whatever the case is, you're spending time trying to make something that you're not happy with something. And that just becomes stressful. So get with people, be with somebody. If you with somebody and you meet them, you connect and you like them as they are, you know, there's everybody can always evolve and grow in different ways. That can be, you know, aesthetic or selfish or whatever. But the reality is you should want to be happy with them as they are. And if that's not enough, whatever. So I will tell you, 10 years, you know, about to be 10 years in the game. I will say that, you know, when I met him, I liked him as he was. I said, oh, this is a nice guy. He's cute. He's nice. He's very thoughtful. He's smart. You know, it was a very, just like, this is a good person. And then as our relationship evolved, they got even better with time. It was like wine. It was like all these different things about them. When I first dated them, they were a vegetarian. I was like, ooh, vegetarian? You know, that wasn't a deal breaker, but it was like, this is going to be interesting on these dates. And we did. We went on dates and they would eat meatless things. I was just like, but then as we dated, they became a carnivore. And so, you know, it just got improved. This is improved. This is very so superficial. Don't take me seriously, but I'm being real though. It's like things improved, you know, the stuff they wore, the way they dressed. It was like, oh, wow, they're okay. You know, they're getting into their groove. And now I'm just like, oh my goodness, this person is incredible. Like they are like, you know, the deluxe, the version of what I dated. Oh my God, look at that. You know, and just growing with a person. Even me, I feel, you know, where I'm at now to where I was 10 years ago, I feel so much enhanced and so much confident and even more confident in who I was and just even more, you know, on top of my shit and just very assertive and assured. And that's the things that, you know, you want to cultivate and build. But you got to like the person, essentially. You got to like them who they are. And if nothing changed and if time stopped and they were who they were at that moment, would you still like them? And that's, you know, what a lot of people, I tell people. So when I hear people, you know, none of my friends, but I was hearing a girl talk about this guy. She was entertained. I was like, you know, on a train head to Baltimore. And this girl was like, yeah, I like him or whatever. But, you know, I just wish he had this and he did this. And da-da-da-da-da. I was like, okay, girl, that's a whole nother man. Everything you describing that you say he is not, that's a whole nother man. You need to get with that man. The one you with is not that person. And you're trying to make that person. But there's something superficial there. Maybe she likes him because he has a job that is, he has a lot of money, but everything else is not there. Or she likes him because he looks really, really good. And she probably had sex with him and she thought the situation was dope. And so maybe she's like, I want to have all the other things because these things, you got to pick and choose and can't waste no one's time. And I realized that with myself. Like, I was in situations where I was with people where there were superficial things that made me attracted to them, but the other stuff was not there. And it wasn't going to ever be there. And so sometimes you got to, you know, you got to fold them where you hold them and just let it go and let it rock. But, you know, what do I know? So that's just my thoughts. There was another show I watched on Netflix called Glamorous. It has, I keep calling Miranda, but Kim Cattrall from Sex and the City. She's on this show and she's the lead. And there's a Latinx actor who's in the show, a queer person. They're on this show. It's okay. It's a fun watch. It's like Ugly Betty meets the Devil Wears Prada. I mean, these types of shows don't. I mean, when I watched it, no shade, it was entertaining, it was whatever, it was cool. But I felt like this show was meant to come out like 5 years ago. Like everything about it just felt dated in 2023, if that makes sense. I feel like this would have been a good show like 5 years ago, which is wild that 2018, it was 5 years ago. But no, seriously, I feel like it's fun to watch. And I watched it almost like I was watching a show that came out a while ago rather than a show that's now. And also the thing for me is that there's a theme in this show with all these shows is that, you know, I'm just tired of all the gay actors and people and shows. We are always like these like inspirational type of aspirational figures in TV. Like we just can't be basic or reckless. Some of us can. Let me, you know, some shows allow us to be that reality shows, but a lot of TV scripted shows with gay characters, we're always playing these subservient roles to straight women. And I'm sick of it. I'm sick of it. I don't do it in my real life. I fell in that trap when I was younger where I felt like that was being done to me. And I got sick of that shit. Like, I don't want to be your fucking counselor. I don't want to be your fucking shrink. I got a life. I got my own shit. I'm trying to be the best I can fucking be in my life. I'm trying to be the lead character in my fucking life. I don't have time to be your you know, your emotional puppy, especially for free. Like, if you want consultation, pay me. And yeah, I could do all the things, you know, with an invoice. But it's just, I don't know. I just was watching the show and I was just like, you just kind of know this script. And it's always the same fucking script. And where does the gay character live? And does he have a partner? I hate the word partner. Do they have a boyfriend, a husband, girlfriend, whatever? Do they have someone they with? Do they have other things other than circulating and worry about your fucking man issues? Like, I just think that's what gets on my nerves with the way that, you know, queer characters are often cast on these types of shows. It's just, it's always this, you know, this need to be useful. And I just would like us to just be no shit characters on shows or have plot lines that are just more compelling and more interesting than just simply being the wise, good, aspirational one. The one that doesn't make mistakes. The one that doesn't do dumb shit or say silly things. I don't know. I just would like to see more nuance in queer characters on shows. You know. But it's cool. I guess you could watch it. Speaking of shows. So, Summer House, Martha's Vineyard, the finale was on Bravo. It was cool. It was okay. I don't necessarily need a season two of this show. I'm going to be honest. I think that you all should watch it in all of its silliness. But I don't need a season two of this. I don't like these people enough for season two. Preston Mitchum was great, but he was the only gay person on the show. And literally, they did not give him the full-fledged out, you know, experience. I just felt like he was just, you know, they made him a supporting person and he had more to say. And I know him as a person. I think he's much better. He was on Watch What Happened Live with Andy Cohen, which was kind of cool to watch tonight doing his thing. But, you know, I just really feel like, you know, there's just so much more that could have been, you know, rather than watching these bratty cis heads argue about basic shit. And some of this, I'm just like, do y'all just have no friends? Is everybody just aloof? It's just so obvious that you can see the problems in these relationships, just dynamics of people performing roles they don't need to be performing, people trying to be more than what they are, people, you know, trying to just push machismo. And it just was corny at points. But overall, you know, it was great to see Black people, you know, not the whole show fighting each other and just throwing chairs and tables. So there was nice, healthy, fun, interesting arguments. Some of it was very vapid, but it was just, you know, it was an interesting experience. Looking forward to going to Martha's Vineyard myself and letting you all know what is real about it and what is not based on a reality show. So we'll see. A lot of you all are really into this show called The Bear. I have not watched it. I know. I've heard good things about it. I heard season two is just phenomenal. It avoids a sophomore slump. I'm hearing good things about this show. I'm hearing as an Emmys contender, the lead actor might win Best Lead Actor in a Comedy if he beats out, you know, Jason Sudeikis for Ted Lasso. But I heard Ted Lasso season three sucked. I'm really happy to hear that because, you know, I'm Team Abbott Elementary. I want Abbott Elementary to win Best Comedy at the Emmys this year. You know, drama, I feel like that's a wrap. We all know this is Emmy forecast, so I'm in Emmy forecast mode for y'all who watched Emmy Awards. You know, July next month, the Emmy nominations are going to be going out, so everybody's going to be losing their mind to figure out who's going to get what. Honestly, I'm really focused on the comedy. I really want Abbott Elementary to win Best Comedy this year. I think it can happen. And I think Succession's going to win Best Drama, hands down. Who's going to get in those lead acting categories and nominations and who's going to pull that out? You know, time will tell. But from what I'm gathering, I hope that Abbott Elementary wins. I think it will. I think it had a really strong full season. The acting was good. The buzz has been good. I think everyone's feeling Abbott. I hope that the time away from the series finale and, you know, Emmy season, I hope that doesn't have the voters, you know, getting a little lingering because, you know, sometimes they do that. But typically voters, I mean, the campaigns are going to begin again. The four-year consideration campaigns are already beginning. If you don't know what this is, four-year consideration is when all these shows that would be considered for an Emmy nomination begin to put out marketing on social media, on variety and publications so that Emmy voters, right, voters can, like myself, those who judge, can vote and nominate. So I am a member of the National Academy of Television Arts and Sciences, and I have been voting and watching TV programs, rating them, you know, giving my ballot for consideration for nominations. We're in that phase right now across the country where many members of the Academy are right now reviewing shows and episodes and things of that nature and voting and, you know, hopefully trying to get people nominated. What is also happening is that people are sending for your consideration memos out there, you know, on social media things like consider my show for this, consider my show for these categories. So, you know, it's a lot of that happening right now. Lots of, you know, buzz. And, you know, as a member, I am reviewing, I am judging, I am reviewing content and judging and submitting stuff for nominations. And so I'm a proud regional vice president that is reviewing all the great, wonderful things and looking forward to seeing these nominations. Regional Emmy nominations come out in August and, you know, the primetime Emmy nominations come out next month. So there's a lot that's going on right now. So just, you know, stay woke and stay tuned. Now, without further ado, the BET Awards. What the fuck was that? If you did not watch the BET Awards, it's okay. Because they didn't really market it this year. They didn't really promote it heavily. And guess what? You didn't miss anything. It was god-awful. It was terrible. This was the worst BET Awards I have seen. And that says a lot. Because I know people have been saying it's been falling off for several years. But I feel like every year there'll be some redeeming qualities of it. There'll be some fun moments that can justify it. But this year was just a flopping mess. And there's several things wrong with the show. And I'm going to tell you them. For starters, this felt like the Hip Hop Awards. So the BET Hip Hop Awards is a separate award show. I've been to a BET Hip Hop Award show in Atlanta a couple years ago. So I've seen these award shows in action. A lot of times these award shows, you know, the BET Awards is nothing but a bunch of rappers performing all day. Hip hop, hip hop, hip hop, hip hop, hip hop. And, you know, so, and these awards are silly and, they, you know, if people get their awards or whatever. It's really pointless. They do the little cipher and it's a moment, right? People like to watch. It's a bunch of who there, what's that. But the BET Awards felt like that this year. It was a lot of rap. It was a lot of hip hop, like a lot of rapping, a lot of rap. And they were trying to give it, you know, celebrate 50 years of hip hop, which I get, 50 years. Hip hop started in 1973 in New York. And so this was a moment. But, you know, it's been 50 years. They had these moments, these tributes throughout the show. It just seems like everybody's doing these tributes. The Grammys did their own version of the 50 years of hip hop. Everyone wants to celebrate it. I get it. But it's exhausting. All those rappers, all these segments, all these little moments. They want to, you know, celebrate the South. And they want to acknowledge this moment. They want to nominate the 90s and the 80s and the rap and the trends. And the, I mean, everything has to be covered. It's so much. So that was just exhausting. As far as awards go, they really didn't announce that many awards this year. It was very centered on women, which I didn't mind. Best New Artist went to Coco Jones, what a shocker. Best Female Rap Artist went to Latto, shocker. I just thought that Ice Spice was probably going to snatch them because normally they go with the younger, hipper, fresher thing. But I was pleasantly surprised Coco Jones won, which I was happy for her. Beyonce won several awards that she, of course, did not accept in person. You know, she don't really go to the BET Awards anymore, and I don't blame her. Would it have been nice that they could have did a 20th anniversary Dangerously in Love celebration of that impactful album that came out 20 years ago around this time, y'all? History. You know, Dangerously in Love. Dangerously in Love is 20 years old. That album, wow. Crazy in Love, all of that era. Naughty Girl, Baby Boy, which is one of my favorite Beyonce songs, and also my favorite off that album. All of those great hits. Nope. They just wanted to focus on hip-hop being 50, which I can't complain about. Other things that was tragic. All of the female rappers, I mean, there were so many great rappers. Glorilla, Ice Spice. Everybody was on stage except Lil' Kim. I miss her. Nicki wasn't there. Cardi did not come. Which brings me to the highlight. Perhaps the best thing of the entire show for me was Quavo and Offset performing together. They reunited. They squashed their beef. They was able to get on the show as two black men on the show performing. Takeoff was in the background. You know, of course, he was murdered. And they had the image of him in the background. It's like a tribute and sung some of their hits. And it was like a little Migos reunion thing. And they was able to get together and patch up on that stage. So that was perhaps the most touching part, the best part of the show. Everything else seems to get very mushy and muddy and reckless. And so here was one of the biggest disappointments. The lip syncing. Oh my God, all the rappers, all the female rappers were lip syncing. And I get that to a certain extent they were doing some heavy, you know, choreography. But it just was me, but everybody looked
sounded the same, dressed the same, same appeal. I couldn't separate them apart from each other. Everybody just was looking the same. Even Dolce, who had this song back in the day, she's now looking like the rest of the girls. She was supposed to be unique and a different type of artist, and she just sounded and looked the same like everybody else. I couldn't keep up. It was all these artists, and people were saying on Twitter, like, who's that? I feel like I'm getting old. I don't know who that is. I'm looking at them like, I don't know who these people are either, child, and I keep up with pop culture. That's what was telling me what the BET Awards was. They could not really cultivate the talent. They just cannot get the star power out there. It was just not that, there was no big stars. Like, I didn't feel, I mean, Ice Spice, I guess, she's hot right now. So she was there. You know, Glorilla, I guess. You know, but any of the hot big names, they didn't have, you know, 21 Savage, Lil Baby, Meg Thee Stallion, Nicki, Cardi, Beyonce, Jay-Z, oh my goodness, who else is hot right now? None of the hot artists that are out right now, Drake, none of them was there. You know, there was none of those big names. You know, Lotto was there, I guess that's a big name, you know, but it was just a lot of like upper B level artists, you know, newcomers, but there was just no real major star power that legitimized the show for the most part. Patti LaBelle doing the Tina Turner tribute, you know, look, Patti knew it wasn't good. I knew it wasn't good. It wasn't good, y'all. It was a disaster. And to be honest, I was scratching my head the whole time saying, why was Patti LaBelle even doing the tribute to Tina? I don't understand why they thought that was a good idea. And she didn't even know the song. She doesn't remember the lines. She doesn't remember the lines of her own songs. Bless Patti. Patti LaBelle is a legend. But, you know, Patti is not hitting that. She don't even know the lyrics of her own songs. And she definitely did not even know the lyrics of Tina's song. And so what a tribute, what a mess. It was just a mess. And I felt bad for everybody involved, including Patti LaBelle. Because BET was just fucking up. The tech stuff, the production stuff was off. There was these weird gaps. And let me explain why some of that was the case. The Writers Guild Association, the writers are still on strike. These are writers who write for TV and movies. They're all on strike, y'all. So just like the Tonys a couple of weeks ago, where there was a writer's strike, you can feel it. No host hosted the BET Awards this year, which initially I thought was going to be Taraji P. Henson. Nope. Because here's the thing. If you got a show with a host needs a script. A host needs jokes. A host needs everything. This show ran like it was on hinges. I don't know how anyone can authorize televised award shows without scripts, because it is the ghetto. Because literally what happens is there's a teleprompter that instructs the there was barely any presenters, because they really, you know, presenters are not going up there without knowing what they're doing. Some people try to improv, but that even made it worse. And then the crazy part is, because you don't have a script moving things, when the people win these awards, they go up there and they give these acceptance speeches that are way too long. And low key, they let them go longer because they got to fill in these gaps, because they got to fill in the time slot. So people were giving longer than life acceptance speeches. Tiana Taylor won Best Video Director, I don't know what for. And she wasn't there. Her mother accepted the award. And then her mom called her or FaceTimed her and tried to get her with bad Wi-Fi to get, you know, speak into the mic on the camera to the crowd. It was just the weirdest, cringiest thing ever. It was just terrible. There was just a lot of weird, cringy moments. The only thing that was like semi-entertaining, I mean, like I said, the Quavo and Offset performance was like the biggest highlight, the biggest headline moment for me. The Tina tribute was god-awful. Grammys, MTV Awards, Soul Train Awards, you know, I hear that's back again. Y'all need to figure it out. Get a budget, but make sure y'all do justice to Tina. Tina is a living fucking, I mean, well, she's passed away, but she's a legend. She's an icon. She's great. And I just feel like we're not going to play with Tina, okay? Because I remember some of these Aretha tributes y'all was doing was terrible. Michael Jackson and Prince, you know, Prince had, there were some people that did some bad Prince tributes, but y'all cannot be playing with these legends, okay? Y'all just cannot play with these legends. So if that means calling Beyonce, you know, it's for Tina, girl. And if you don't want to do it, we need to, you know, someone else, you know, I don't know. But we just got to figure this out. We just cannot just be, you know, just disrespecting the greats. They've done so much more for the industry. This is a shame. So just putting it out there. Busta Rhymes was, you know, Lifetime Achievement Award he won, which was well-deserved. You know, Busta Rhymes is a legend. You know, you got to give him his props. He has done a lot.
And it was appropriate given the 50th anniversary of hip hop. He gave a really great speech. And, you know, for the most part, for the final, like, ending of the show, he took over the show, y'all. He just killed it. The show went on for nearly 4 hours. And I can't even tell you who really won anything. I mean, I can only remember Coco Jones winning Best New Artist. And I can remember Lotto winning. Oh, Burna Boy won Best International Act. Again, groundbreaking. Viewer's Choice went to Beyonce. This her award went to Beyonce. And she wasn't there. I don't know who won Video of the Year. I don't think I care. I don't even think anyone cared who won other awards. It was really just like a concert on steroids that was just bad. Most of the show was bad. The final ending of the show got better because the old heads were performing. And they had stage presence. So Redman had stage presence. You know, Busta had stage presence. Soulja Boy came out and did one of the little dances. Then Franchise Boys came out. Then they did the Swag and Surf. It just got really weird. The show, MC Light still MCs. The girl is going to keep a bag. MC Light, one thing she going to do is get an MC bag for real. She MC'd the awards. Writers matter. Tip your bartenders and pay your writers, people. Like, that's just really what it boils down to. These writers just, without a show, an award show without writers, it's just cringy and hard. And I think they thought they could performance their way out of it. Like, if we keep having all these performances, it's going to be great. It just was trash. It just was. It just wasn't there, y'all. Just keep it 100. So, and let me get this off my mind. A lot of you all have been talking about Tyler Perry buying BT. Let me just say, first and foremost, that is not true. That is a rumor. And this is why media literacy matters, and this is why earnestly speaking matters. Let me explain to you all how you all got bamboozled into believing that Tyler Perry was buying BT. Because you all go on these stupid-ass social media sites and look at these stupid little graphics. And people like me, who are real journalists who interview people and confirm facts, oh, you don't click on details, you don't click on articles, you just see little things that say something, you just believe it. And that's where we are. We're just out here just reading, you know, the Shade Room headlines or reading graphics, not knowing who cited the sources, just hearing something and just running with it and believing it and making jokes and making tweets about it. So here's what happened. There was some random fucking website, some blog site that no one's ever heard of, called Streamer with an R, some random name. They published initially a piece that said that, you know, Tyler Perry was going to buy this deal. No one ever heard of the publication before. But you know what? This publication said this. And then you know what happened? Stupid blogs like B. Scott, which is a horrible publication and a horrible person, ran this article, right? B. Scott did. Was a main media outlet that did this. Blog. And this is why bloggers will never be journalists. Ran that story with the headline and was like, according to sources, and hyperlinked this random ass blog site, which no one ever heard of, okay? Ran that story based off of that. And then once B. Scott did it, then of course the other trash urban blog sites also reported it and ran it. No one ever tracked the source, never ever questioned the source. Everyone just ran and fed off each other for clout. So then within, I want to say 12 days to an hour or whatever, somebody noticed that the original story on that original blog got deleted. Because you already know there must have been a phone call and that article deleted. But like gossip and like bad media, right? I tell people bad news information is like a pillow. You get a pillow, you poke a hole in it, right? And feathers come out. And you let it out in the city. You let it out in the air. And the feathers are all flying all over the city. And it's, once you find out that it was popped for no apparent reason, no truth, someone says, go back and get those feathers. They say, I can't get all of them because they've already blown out so far. I can't reach and get those things. And that, my friends, is gossip. That is exactly how misinformation works. You can't get all the feathers. You can't get all the articles. You can't go back and get to the truth. And so let's get to what the fucking truth is. Tyler Perry has not signed the deal. He's not buying BET. That's never been confirmed. None of it was confirmed. They all came from some random gossip blog that people want to believe. And now all these outlets that have ran with that story has now had to retract, redact, delete, or whatever. It's not true. There's no truth to it. And the interesting thing is that actually a more, I guess, respected media outlet that has a little bit more clout, they actually said something very different. So let's talk about that, right? Tyler Perry, okay, New York Post, allegedly.
But this is now a bigger outlet. The New York Post a couple of days ago, right, you know, has put up that media mogul Tyler Perry refuses to cough up the $3 billion plus that Paramount is asking in an auction for BET. And the fierce haggling has begun to throw a sale into doubt, which is what the New York Post is claiming, right? A lot of this, you know, a lot of this is the rumor was that he was the front runner, right? But apparently Tyler Perry allegedly is losing patience. He said this is a drawn out process. After making an offer that was short of $3 billion, a price tag that other investors are also considering to be lofty, people are saying that he already owns a 25% stake in BET Plus, has a private equity backing for his offer. He's used to getting his way and he's frustrated with this situation. The final bids are due mid-July. Okay, now Paramount Global bought BET in 2000 for $2.7 billion, okay? And that was when Shari Redstone-owned company was called Viacom, okay? That company now wants 10 times the BET Group's current $325 million, okay? And this is earnings before taxes, interest, depreciation, and amortization, apparently. Now, to be clear, they're saying the continuing decline of cable's popularity is to be a drag on the future earnings of BET, which we all know because people have been cord cutting. But, you know, Paramount Global owns Paramount Pictures, MTV, CBS, and they also have Paramount Plus. And they're looking, and you know, which they launched the Paramount Plus streaming service and book publisher Simon & Schuster. They got a lot going on. They got $15.6 billion in long-term debt. And apparently, you know, what is going on with all this debt and this interest, the rumor is they're trying to sell this, to get some of this money. There's also speculation that Weather Channel owner, which also owns The Grill, Byron Allen, who I love, is also in this hunt trying to buy it as well. There's also speculation that there's this little group of rappers, of course, 50 Cent, Shaquille O'Neal. They're supposed to be, they're apparently out of the process, leaving Group Black looking for a well-funded partner. So there was a private equity firm, CVC Capital Partners. They partnered with Black Group, which was this media company that was working with those rappers, working with 50 Cent and Shaquille O'Neal. You know, apparently they're out of the process. They're not interested in getting BET. So we're going to see what's going to happen. You know, they're saying a rumor that Paramount may sell BET and Simon Schuster around the same time to take the focus away from how much the properties were able to fetch. That's the speculation. But we're going to see what's going to happen. Final bids are in mid-July. We'll see how this is going to play out. But I'm here to tell you all, Tyler Perry did not buy BET. So all the jokes, all the rhetoric, all the narrative, it's just not true. And this is why media literacy matters, because so many people was hitting me up like, what do you think about BET, Tyler Perry buying BET? And it's like, you know, I don't want to embarrass people, but I want to tell people, where do you get your information from? Check the source. Where, you know, and these are the same people that think they're too good to eat, you know, lab-grown chicken. Oh, you know, I don't eat lab-grown chicken. You know, I don't know what's in that, what's in my body. Child, you've been eating processed food the rest of your life. Lab-grown chicken ain't going to hurt you. Allegedly. So we'll see, but you know, this is the finale of season 4. You know, of course, as I want to reiterate, there'll be no show next week on July 3rd. You know, we're going to be on our little, you know, break before we get into the 5th season. We'll be back Monday, July 10th for the season premiere of season 5. And, you know, this has been a great season. Season 4 was great. I mean, so many career changes. There's going to be so much news. I promise you, when I get to the grand premiere of season 5, there is going to be some big, major season premiere announcements. It's going to blow your socks off. You're not ready for it. And then we're getting ready because, you know, we got the Beyonce concert, Renaissance, her first United States tour in Philly. The Lit Brothers is going to be there. We got a lot of things coming up for the summer. Of course, the rest of this tour and everything else that's happening. So there's so much more surprises
in store, of course, for season 5. But for everyone who's listened to season 4, all of the shockers, all the things, you can all catch up and listen to episodes. For some of you all who are like, oh my goodness, you know, there's a break. This is the time. Catch up. What's been going on? Get ready for what's happening next. And thank you so much for listening, and can't wait for season 5. But as always, be well and be best. Earnestly Speaking is recorded in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and can be found on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. To stay up to date with the latest on the show, follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Mr. Ernest Owens. Use the hashtag Earnestly Speaking to tell me what you thought about this episode, and check out my website at ErnestOwens.com.